Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the pound-for-pound best radio show around the world, it's Leave It In The Ring. He took it from crack the rap, now he put out two anthems a year, and I just want to rock for
a. Welcome everybody to a Sunday special edition. The reason why we're having this Sunday special edition is because we have one of the best trainers out there right now, Freddie Roach, with us. Chris, you on the line with us, brother?
Yes, sir.
So let's already patch in. Let's not have Freddie wait too long. Freddie, are you on the line with us?
How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Hey, well, Freddie, thanks first off for coming through and speaking to us on Leave It In The Ring. You know, every time I come down to the wild card, it's always a pleasure. I always have tons of fun, and I always walk away with plenty of memories to tell to the guys at the pub and all about the gym. So, hey, thanks again for coming through with us. So, Freddie, let's get right down to how has training camp been right now for Manny, getting prepared for Joshua Calati?
Well, you know, we're 3 weeks out right now, and he's right where I want him to be. He boxed 9 rounds yesterday with 3 sparring partners. I get Stevie Forbes came in yesterday as a new sparring partner, his first day with Manny. Stevie did okay, but Manny's speed gave him a little bit of trouble, but that's common, though. And the thing about Pacquiao, he's in great shape. His weight's right. He's on weight already, and actually we have to feed him 5 times a day to keep the weight on him. And he's on fire right now, and he's ready to go.
Now, you know, obviously Joshua is a big welterweight. You know, he's been known to blow up all the way to 160. Is there any concern about that? I mean, Freddie, on your guys' part, I mean, is this gonna, obviously it's a completely different game plan stepping in with Joshua than it is with Miguel Cotto, right?
Yes, of course, and they're totally different styles. But we've been watching the tapes of him, and he has some flaws that we're going to take advantage of course. And you know, the thing is, he is bigger size-wise, and he seems like his uppercuts are his best punch. He's very strong with the uppercuts through the middle. And but the thing is, that passive defense he has can be broken, and we'll take advantage of that. And if he tries to wrestle in the ropes with Pacquiao, that will be his downfall.
Freddie, you know, I've compared his style to the likes of like Winky, right? He reminds me of a lot stronger Ike Corte. He doesn't carry the firepower that Azuma Nelson did. And everybody's saying that, knowing that he's been criticized a whole lot for not throwing a lot of punches. Would you be surprised, though, if he was to change his game plan and not get into that peekaboo style and come forward and try to engage with Manny?
Well, he's been doing it for so long, it's part of his game, but I'm sure his new trainer is trying to make those adjustments, of course. And, you might see him a little more active, but he still has that habit of going to the ropes and maybe just resting, trying to get the other guy to break and wear himself out on him. But Manny Pacquiao doesn't get tired, so I mean, that's that strategy won't work. But if he does let his hands go and comes forward and doesn't land the ropes, I think he'll be much more effective like that. But our speed's gonna take care of that with no problems.
You know, that old saying is speed kills anything that gets in front of them, you know. And obviously, your guy had all the speed in the world, you know. But this last fight with Miguel Cotto, he had decided to stand there in front of Miguel Cotto and allowed Cotto to land some shots. And I know you were not about that. Have you stressed that to Manny about maybe not doing that with Joshua?
Well, we've talked about it, of course. And the thing is, you know, he just felt that he needed to prove something to himself and to in Takoto at the time. And I told, you know, I told him, if you take him to the ropes, I said, now let's be productive off the ropes and let's work on it. So we are practicing on the ropes. We will take him to the ropes sometimes, but we're going to use a lot smarter strategy on how to take care of that when he does get caught in the ropes. But for the most part, I don't want him on the ropes, but if it does, if he feels the need and he sees something, we will go there. We have a beautiful counterpunch set up for that. So hopefully he will come.
Do you feel that Joshua is by far one of the best opponents you guys are stepping in with? I mean, I feel that this is a far more tougher challenge than any of the guys so far that you guys have stepped in with.
Well, you know, the thing is, he's bigger and he's stronger, of course, and he's grown a lot also. I don't think he's as good as Morales, Marquez, or Barrera. I think those are much better fighters than Claudio, much more complete fighters than Claudio. Claudio's very predictable. And I've been studying all his tapes, and the more that I watch the tapes, the more flaws I find. And he just makes too many mistakes for Manny Pacquiao. I mean, if he's relying on being bigger and stronger to win the fight, it's not going to happen because the better boxer is going to win the fight, not size.
Absolutely. But, you know, what I was trying to say is, you know, because the criticism has been, I'm pretty sure you've heard about it, is Oscar was weight drained, right? Hatton was not a great fighter.
Well, you guys didn't say that before the fight, though.
Right.
That came after the fight, okay? So
right,
I think
right.
That's bullshit. I think Manny Pacquiao beats Oscar in his prime just as bad as he did because he can't fight southpaws with speed. So I don't think he was weight trained.
Right.
I don't take that into consideration. He knows how to get ready for a fight his whole life.
Absolutely, I agree with you, Bill. But this is a question I got for you because, you know, like I said, those criticisms have been thrown out, even with Miguel Cotto. You know, there's some people that say, oh, Miguel's a shell of himself, you know. But this one here, this particular fight here, I think you have to agree with me that this is a prime fight. There cannot be any excuses about you guys picking to fight Joshua Kalani because this is a dangerous fight, right?
Agreed. But the thing is, you know, since the Mayweather fight didn't happen, there was really nowhere else for us to go. We had to pick the best guy available, and Claudio is that guy. The thing is, I mean, I have a lot of confidence in my fighter, of course, but I know that he's a very difficult guy. I respect him as a fighter. I respect him as a human being. He's a gentleman, and he knows how to fight. But I just have a lot of confidence in Manny. We have a really, really good game plan for Claudio. Claudio. So the thing is, we just got to pull the game plan off, and I think we can make it look a lot easier than it is, of course, because he is a tough guy, and, you know, we do have to respect his power and size.
You know, when I had went in there, the last interview I conducted with you in the wild card, you had told me, you know, Floyd Mayweather is the easiest fight out of all three. Do you still feel like that? I mean, with having Joshua, say like now what you just said, we had nowhere else to go. We had to go with Joshua Kalani. But do you feel that the fight with Floyd would have been easier than the fight we're having right now with Joshua?
Yes. The thing is, you know, and it's a much more exciting fight for the fans, of course, because Kalani will fight. And one thing about Floyd, he's great at what he does. He's very defensive, of course. But you can see on all his tapes how he can be broken down in certain fights. I mean, even Zab Judah had really some success with him until he got tired. But, you know, the thing is, Manny Pacquiao is a condition freak, and he won't get tired. And I do feel that this is a tougher fight. And the thing is, if Mosley beats Mayweather and we fight Mosley, that will be a tougher fight too.
There's been some talk saying that the rumor is if you guys are successful over the Ghana Warrior and whoever's the winner of the Mayweather Mosley, if you guys don't get the winner of that fight, that's it. You guys are just going to retire the gloves and walk away. Is there any truth to that?
Well, we've talked about that because, you know, I don't want Manny to stay in the game too long. I don't want to be one of those guys that you know, was fighting beyond his best years. I know Manny has a lot of fights left in him, but he has a lot of other interests. And if he happens to win the election in May, this could be our last fight. Yes, but we really want the Mayweather fight, though. I mean, you know, Manny's really, really upset about what Mayweather said about him and so forth. He's trying to defame his character and just Manny. I've never seen Manny dislike somebody before in my life. But he shows me how he would beat Mayweather. He imitates Mayweather. He knows what he's all about. And you know, Mayweather, I don't think he's. I don't see it. I mean, he was great at one time, but he's slipping a lot. He struggled with Oscar. I mean, he struggled for six rounds with Ricky Hatton. Pacquiao destroyed both guys and didn't lose a second of either round. I just don't see it. I hope Mosley wins the fight because I'd rather fight him because it's a much better entertaining fight. The guy that runs is, you know, puts people to sleep.
You know, I kind of want to just touch on just a little bit about Mayweather, but I have so many questions about the Joshua Claudia fight. You know, that to me raises so much interest. I know a lot of fight fans now are barely starting to see that this is by far a super mega fight, in my opinion. I think a lot of fight fans are now starting to see that this is a super mega fight. I know a lot of people were disappointed about the Floyd Mayweather fight not happening. Freddie, have you had a chance to run into the Mayweathers? You know, I mean, they said a lot of bad stuff, you know, and you said right now Manny is upset. But seeing that Manny's this upset, does it still build interest in your guys' part to continue in the wanting to get them in the ring? Because the fact is, a lot of the times when somebody has so much rage and hate for them, they're not fighting their game plan anymore.
That's something I have to be careful with, of course. You know, the thing is, getting Manny ready, if Mayweather does come to the table, and of course, if he beat Shane, I have to make some really adjustments mentally for Manny, and I'm not having him go into the fight angry. And Manny will go in with the game plan, and he's pretty good at sticking to the game plan nowadays. We work really hard on it, and the thing is, I won't let that anger get to him. But you know, we never know until it happens, though, of course. So, but I think I can pretty much control Manny's emotions. But, I mean, he wants Mayweather next so badly. And the thing is, you know, they both need to win their fights, of course. And, you know, the thing is, we're not going to give Mayweather any edge at all, though. You know, he wants the Olympic-style drug testing, all this bullshit he wants. We're not going to give him nothing, because if you give him something and he becomes bigger than the commission, bigger than the sport, it's like giving the first two rounds away, giving him confidence and so forth. We'll go by the Nevada commission rules and by the sanctioning body rules, and that's the rules we're going to go by. If he doesn't want to fight us at those rules, then he can go fight some girl.
You know, you've always been great in what you say in your predictions. You know, Freddie, your eye is one of a kind. You know, how to make adjustments. You know how to make sure your fighters follow through on certain situations. And you've always been right. I even told you one time, if I could see that time machine that you have in the back, so that when I place my bet, I'm on key, you know. What do you see happening with the Floyd Mayweather versus Sugar Shane Mosley? Who takes that fight, Freddie?
Well, you know, it's a very difficult fight for Shane, because he has trouble with speed and movement. I think Mayweather will win the fight. Shane's my friend, and I hope he wins the fight. But, you know, I don't bet with my heart. I bet with my mind. And the thing is, he does great against guys like Margarita that come at him. He grew up in L.A., having all those Mexicans attack him all the time, and that's when he's at his best, when people attack him, of course. But Mayweather's movement and speed will give him a lot of trouble. I do believe that Mayweather will win a decision. But, you know, Shane, you know, I could say he has a puncher's chance, but that's Mayweather's so defensive and so hard to hit cleanly. I don't see that happening. I think Mayweather will win a 12-round decision.
If there was an upset, because I think a lot of people will agree that a lot of people are seeing that Floyd Mayweather is going to get past Sugar Shane Mosley. But if there was an upset, Floyd loses, would you guys still be interested? Because obviously there's bad blood already between both of you guys' camps. Would the fight still be interesting enough for you guys to get Floyd Mayweather in there?
No. We have to go with the winner. I mean, the natural course would be to fight the winner of that fight. And Shane and Pacquiao, it may be like the best fight ever because you got two guys who like to fight and both guys will come forward. If he loses, I mean, he's not undefeated anymore. He's not all what he says he is. I think the public will demand us to fight the winner of the fight. And if Shane wins the fight, we will welcome that challenge.
Now, I know that there's some type of clause stipulated in their contract saying there should be a rematch. What do you think about that, Freddie? What do you think about that when a fighter asks for a clause in a contract, a rematch clause?
He well, a lot of times they don't have confidence in themselves. But the thing is, you know, rematches can only be made if the fights go a certain way, if they're entertaining, if the public demand, of course. You know, the thing is, if there's a quick knockout or, you know, a sleeper of a fight and the promoters can't get the fans to watch the rematch, that clause goes away. I mean, it's all negotiations and so forth. But, you know, if it ends up being a great fight and, you know, a close, maybe controversial, whatever it may be, then the rematch would come true. But the thing is, when someone asks for a rematch clause, it just shows a lack of confidence in themselves.
If you guys didn't get that fight, it was, you know, done and over. I know you're saying that, you know, Manny has an election coming up in May. There has been rumors and some talks of another Marquez bout. Are you still interested in something like that, Freddie?
Well, Marquez, you know, he feels that he he probably does deserve another match with Manny Pacquiao. We'd like to give him one. I just tried to make him an American. I wanted to give him a chance at his fourth world title to be the first Mexican to win four titles, but he won't fight us. And instead, I get a mirror with Paulo Malignaggi, but I would much rather him than with Amir. But, you know, Nacho turned the fight down flat and said that Golden Boy was just using him as a stepping stone. I said, a stepping stone? It's for the world title. He could make history, but he chose not to take the fight. So, I'd rather go maybe after Valero or one of these guys coming up right now. And I think Valero Pacquiao would be a really exciting fight. Valero's a southpaw that comes to fight. You know, he's a perfect knockout ratio. There's some other fights out there that might be better, but you know, if Marquez makes sense and the people want to see it, we definitely fight him again. And I would love to get that match one more time, just to shut those people up.
You know, I remember asking you about Valero a while back, and I had said, you know, this is considered the thorn in your guys' foot because he has said that you guys have keep avoiding him. And you've said several times, you're like, we'll fight him tomorrow. And you even told me one time that you were confident enough that you guys would blow him out within a round or two. Seeing what he did in this past last fight with DeMarco, has he impressed you at all ever since, or are you still unimpressed by him?
No, he's I've been watching him, studying him lately because I know he might be a future opponent. But one time I thought he was just a reckless raw kid and stuff like this, but you know what, he's a little smarter than I thought, or he's getting smarter as he's getting more experience and so forth. He's setting things up. He's a difficult southpaw to fight, and he has a lot of guts. I mean, you know, look at that cut he had early in that fight. He weathered through that, and he fought on. He fought, you know, a tremendous fight. And I don't think he had the toughest guy in the world in front of him, but it was a suitable opponent, of course. But I would love to fight him. And the thing is, he needs just to be marketed more in America. And you know, of course, that was the start of his marketing. because he's on American TV now, and maybe I told Aaron, I said, we should put him on the undercard, and maybe he might be next and make, get this, build this fight up a little bit, because, Valero's not that well known in America yet, and he can only fight in Texas right now. So Cowboy Stadium does make sense, but we'll see.
You know, when you witness that fight with Valerio, Freddie, how do you react, or what do you think when you see commentators compare him to your fighter? When I don't see the similarities, do you see similarities there? I mean, just other than the fact they're both southpaws.
That's the only similarity they have, But Manny was a little reckless when he started, of course, and Valero was a little reckless, and I think that's the only thing they have in common. But they're completely different fighters.
Completely.
Yes.
Freddie, I want to move away from that really quick. I want to talk about the young 17-year-old kid that got signed by Tom Bragg and walked into your wild card gym, Jose Benavides, and you decided to start training this young prospect. What did you see about him, and what made you go, hey, I think we got something here?
You know, it's funny because he comes to my gym, and I didn't know who he was or why he was there. Someone told me he's a pretty good fighter from Phoenix, and I was paying no attention to him for the first couple of days, and I said, so finally me and his father spoke, and he says, this is the guy that we called about and so forth, but the person that was setting the meeting up never confirmed it, and so I didn't really know that was him. And so one day I'm watching him box, and I says, I said, who is this kid? He can fight. I mean, he got in there with one of my veteran pros and just ate him up. And I says, hey, and I went to his dad, and I says, now I know who you are. I says, because I ignored them for a couple of days, and it was embarrassing for me a little bit because I didn't, our communication lines get crossed a little bit. But the thing is, this kid can fight. I mean, he sparred with Manny twice last week, and he did okay. I mean, someone said Manny beat him up a little bit. I says, well, he's 17 years old. I says he's in there with the best fighter in the world. I says, I was very, very happy with him because, he does like to go to the ropes like Claudia a little bit, so he's similar in that. When he does that, and he's got some height, and he doesn't have Claudia's power yet. But the thing is, he's only 137 pounds, and he has two pro fights now, and he is only 17. And for a 17-year-old to get into a Manny Pacquiao and hold his own, I'm very proud of him, and I think it's going to make his confidence grow. And he spars with Amir Khan also. And him and Amir, I mean, some days they're about 50-50. So, I mean, his experience is getting better and better in the gym. And, I get a special license for him at 17 to the Nevada Commission with my recommendation. They said, because everyone wanted maybe him to try for the Olympics. But the Olympic-style boxing is so different from pro-style now. It's not like it's almost like two different sports now. So you have to make so many adjustments and changes to get that amateur style out of a lot of fighters. So a gold medal nowadays doesn't really mean that much. I said, the thing is, if you can fight, so I did turn him pro, and he's 2-0 now, and he's going to be on the day before Manny Pacquiao. He's going to be on the show in Texas on the 12th, his third pro fight. And we're thinking about moving up to 6 rounders already, but I think we need one more 4-rounder, and then we'll go to 6. And he is one of the best prospects in the world today.
Well, let me ask you this, because I know right now there's plenty of 17-year-old kids listening to the show right now. What exactly, before you start getting a big crowd of 17-year-old kids thinking that, the infamous Freddie Rich is going to pick them up, what exactly does a 17-year-old Freddie got to show you, in the ring, for you to say, okay, let's go pros?
The thing is that work ethic is very important to me, of course, and I don't like lazy people, and, because this is a hard sport, and if you're going to do it, you better do it 100%. But, what impressed me most about Benavides, he's 17 years old, and he's taking guys to the ropes He's taking them there. He's not just getting caught on the ropes. He's taking them there. He's putting himself there, and he's setting up counter shots. Very mature for a young kid. I mean, I know good pros who can't do that now. I mean, he's beyond his years, and his dad's done a great job with him. And his dad told me I took him as far as I could, and he said, can you help us? So the thing is, I mean, it was a great situation for me, you know, and the thing is, his work ethic and his desire are my biggest thing, because if you have that, I mean, you know, hopefully we can mold you into something. And this kid, he has the tools, but he just needs to sharpen them up a little bit and shorten his punches and his combination up a little bit. He's a little bit long with his hooks sometimes, but overall, you know, he's very teachable and very wants to learn.
Was there a lot of convincing in their part, Freddie? I mean, when you approached them about turning pros, or was it the opposite, the other way around? Was it them coming to you trying to convince you to make him go pros?
No, you know, we had discussion about that, about turning pro or staying in the amateurs. And if he stayed with the amateurs, he thought, you know, go to the Olympic Training Center and so forth. But he wanted to stay at the wild card and work with me. And we talked about winning a gold medal and what it does to you nowadays. It's not like it once was, like when Leonard and those guys, you know, get those big signing bonuses and contracts and so forth. So, you know, we had Golden Boy interested in him, and we had a top rank wanted to do with the kids. So we had a little competition there. So it was good for the outcome for him. Getting a signing bonus and getting a monthly salary, so he can, you know, just not have to work and just do his job and train. And he lives next door to me in my house, him and his dad. So it's a great situation for the kid. And he's a really, really nice kid, and he's a gentleman. And the thing is, you know, he's not a trash talker. He's very quiet, very conservative, but he's all that, and he can fight.
You know, we had him on Thursday, and I got to say, I love the kid's personality, and he held his own in the interviews, carrying the conversation fairly well. And it sounds like, you know, you definitely got a diamond here in boxing. At 17-year-old Freddie, how do you build such a young fighter into the pros into making him become a world champion?
Well, with him, you know, we're going to take our time. We're not going to really rush him. You know, on average, it takes about 4 years to develop a fighter from his first pro fight to a world title fight. I mean, I've had a couple Olympians and a couple silver medalists and gold medalists, and developing those guys who are the elite of their era in the amateurs, it's about a 4-year process. So the thing is, we have time is on our side, so we don't have to rush anything. And but you know, the thing is, the competition with the four rounders so far hasn't been that good, and so we're thinking about moving up to six. But we're going to take a little bit of a tougher fight in Texas with the four rounder with a little more experience. And if he comes through, then we'll go to six rounds. But the thing is, you know, we don't have to rush this kid right now, and we're going to take our time with him and make the right decisions at the right time.
Man, I cannot wait. I'm pumped up to see him move forward and see how he progresses and grows into the sport, Freddie. I'm going to pass it on to my co-host because I know he's got some questions for you, and I know we got a lot of questions for you, some regarding Khan and some regarding Antonio Margarito. Chris?
Yeah, Freddie, in regards to the Claudie matchup with Manny, I'm just curious, whose final decision was it to fight Claudie? Because it seems a bit of a high-risk, low-reward matchup in a way.
Well, the thing is, I mean, you know, we took the Claudie fight. Me, Manny, we sat down, we talked about who's going to be next. And, you know, Aram had mentioned Claudie, and we accepted that fight because he's the number one contender out there. And the thing is, you know, after the Mayweather fight fell through, of course, there really wasn't much of a choice. You know, Claudio, Valero, those type of guys, and we wanted to fight. Manny likes challenges, and he wants to fight the best guys out there. So the thing is, this is a challenge, and that's what he wants.
Now, I know with the Miguel Cotto fight, you know, you guys had him come down a little bit in weight to 144, 145. Are you at all concerned about the Claudio? I mean, you guys, you know, you're fighting him at 147, but he's been known to put on upwards of 20 pounds the night of the fight. Is that all a concern, just the fact that he may be a lot, I mean, almost 2 to 3 divisions higher than Manny Pacquiao come the night of the fight?
You know, my own opinion on that, if you gain more than 10 pounds from weigh-in to fight time, you're making your body sluggish and slow, because food does slow our skills down in our senses. And the heavier he comes in, the happier I'll be. The thing is, we'll break that body down, and he doesn't have enough time to digest 20 pounds of food if that's what he does. So the bigger he is, the better for us, I feel. And Manny is going to weigh in on the scale at 147, and he's going to go into the ring at 149 to 149.5. And we know exactly what our weight is, and we know our best fighting weight is also. And, the thing is, Cotto did have to come down a little bit, but Manny wants to be a welterweight now. If anyone wants to fight him at 140, that's not going to happen. We're staying at welterweight, and Manny's happy at that weight. So we felt that Claudio was the right choice and the best choice for the fans.
Right. Now, something you touched on earlier, you said Manny's really frustrated, and he's pretty much pissed off at Floyd with the accusations and whatnot. There seems to be a bit of a backlash from some fans as well, taking Floyd's side and stuff in this whole stupid controversy. I'm just curious, has Manny heard anything about that? Is he just, what are his thoughts on, like, some of the fans kind of, you know, siding with Floyd and kind of accusing him of things, you know, without any substantial? Has that affected Manny at all?
Well, yeah, that's why the lawsuit is still happening, and we will win that lawsuit. I'm sure, because he has no proof, no evidence whatsoever. It is slander. It is the defamation of character. He's trying to ruin Manny's reputation, and Manny's the cleanest guy in the world. He's the cleanest guy I know. So the lawsuit is going on, and we are going to sue him and Golden Boy, and we're going to win that lawsuit.
Right. Now, through HBO's 24/7, we've got to learn a lot more about you personally. You've been featured on the show quite a few times, your life inside and outside of boxing. Has that show been, aside from, you know, the financial and, the pay-per-view buys and anything, has that show been a blessing and a curse for you both? Because I understand that it brings a lot of attention, and it brings a lot more people coming to your gym and stuff, and it can be distractions. You know, do you look at that as more of a blessing or a curse, you know, the 24/7 exposure for yourself personally?
Well, I don't get pay-per-view money, so I wish I did. But I don't have to really be on 24/7 because it doesn't make me a dime. But the thing is, I enjoy the show. The crew, you know, we've been together so long now. They're very comfortable, and they're not too much imposing. But it has changed my life. I always wanted to be famous, and maybe for being a world champion more than a trainer. But the thing is, I kind of like people, and I always wanted to be a little bit famous, and it, now that it's kind of here, it's not that great sometimes, because it's just it gets overwhelming at times and so forth. But you know, I do appreciate when people, you know, recognize you for what you do, sometimes we get, like Saturday, there was about 200 people at the gym in the parking lot. And Manny had to go to a meeting somewhere, so I had to go take pictures and sign autographs for the Filipino people that came to the gym. And you know what? Someone says, don't you get tired of it? I said, you know what? It's not that hard to take a picture and make somebody's day, make them happy. I had nothing to do the rest of the day anyway. So, you know, it's fun, but every time I see Ross Greenberg, it says, you know what? You changed my life. Yeah, he just laughs at me. So, hey, but it's, uh, it's nice to be recognized for what you do, though, it is.
Chris, before you ask another question, got to make sure, Freddie, can you stay a little longer? I know you had something else planned on.
I'm fine.
Okay, I just have a couple more questions, Freddie. In regards to your fighter, Amir Khan, I know originally people thought he was going to fight Maidana because Maidana was the mandatory, and now he's slated to fight Pauly. Do you think that there's any chance that we're going to see Amir fight either a Marcos Maidana or a Timothy Bradley maybe by the end of this year?
I think so. The thing about Maidana is nobody knows him yet. I mean, they know him over, he's starting to get a little recognition when to be Ortiz, of course. But the thing is, I mean, he's a real, real tough fight. So I don't want to fight that guy for nothing, for free. So the thing is, I said, we got to build that fight up. I said, put them both on the same show a couple times and build that fight up. I mean, the science of building fights is kind of lost nowadays with these promoters, and because they're afraid to put two big fights in the same show because it's going to cut somebody's money somewhere. But the thing is, they need to promote these fights and build up the attraction and the attention of the general public. And the thing is, I wanted Marquez so badly though for his next fight and for his American debut because matchmaking is timing, and I think it's the right time. I know it's not an easy fight, but I think it's one that we can win. But that didn't happen. Nacho decided not to fight us. So Paulie Malignaggi was the next guy out there. I don't even really want to fight Paulie, though, because he's such an asshole. I used to respect this guy and like him, but, he opens his mouth and says that Amir's on steroids now because he trains with Freddie Roach and stuff. He's giving you... I might smack him when I see him. I might. I'm pissed off about that with him. I mean, I feel like pulling Amir out of the fight and telling him go get a payday somewhere else because there's no paydays for you. I said, you've knocked out five guys in your career. I said there must have been five girls. I swear, this guy. But if Amir doesn't knock him out, I'll be very disappointed.
All right, I just have one last question. Guillermo Rigondeaux, a guy that you're working with now, had a great performance, a really good body shot stoppage on Friday Night Fights a couple weekends ago. What do you like about this kid, and what do you see his career trajectory? Because I know he's kind of on a fast pace because of his age and his amateur credentials.
Yeah, but that guy can fight. I mean, geez, I mean, working the mitts with him is just like amazing sometimes. But the thing with him, I got to get him in his mind to be a little bit more offensive. And I know it's going to be hard to do because he has 475 fights in the amateurs, and he's using that counterpunching style and that amateur kind of passive defense, of course. But he is a very good fighter. But, they want him to go into a title fight right away. I told his people that we need some rounds. We need a couple more, durable-type people that will give us rounds because if we put him in a tough title fight right now, a 12-round fight, and he's never been past. He went eight. I think it was eight. So he's been eight before. But the thing is, I just like a couple more tough opponents that are known for going distance and not getting knocked out, and give him a little more seasoning. But he is a complete fighter. I mean, with the right opponent, I would put him in a title fight like with someone that comes to you, like Israel Vasquez or Marquez. I would fight either one of them tomorrow. But the thing is, they're not available right now because they're going to fight each other. But we'd love to get the winner of that or some sort. But he will be a world champion, I feel. He has great dedication. And he's not like a lot of the Cubans who go to Miami and party and stuff like that. He's a very disciplined person.
All right. Well, I'm going to pass it back to my host, Dave. But thanks for answering my questions, Freddie, and I appreciate the time.
Thank you very much.
I got just one more question for you, Freddie, then I'll let you go. And I appreciate you coming on. Before I ask that question, how's your brother Pepper doing, brother?
He's doing good. He's crazy as ever. So he's in the gym helping me all the time and showing his tattoos off. And so, we have an over and under every day. Like, if we get a new customer coming in, we say, how long before he takes his shirt off? 30 seconds to a minute. So, he's comical, but he's a good guy.
You know, when I was in there, you had told me that, you know, there were some comparisons to Mickey Ward, his brother, to you and your brother. Could you refresh my memory a little bit on what that comparisons was?
Well, you know, when Mark Wahlberg and Christian Bale came to the gym and they came with Dickie Eklund and Mickey Ward, who are, you know, have the same mother, they're brothers. And Dickie came and told me that, you know, our families are very similar. And I said, why is that? He says, well, he says, I was a better fighter than Mickey, and Pepper was a better fighter than you. And I said, yeah, that's true. He says, yeah, but we both ended up on drugs and had no discipline. You and Mickey both had discipline and took it a lot further than we did. I said, you know, I said, yeah, you're right. We do have very similar cases, because Dickie and Pepper used to get high together, and they were experimenting as young kids with drugs at that time. And, you know, Mickey's, and it's funny because Mickey's first fight of his life, he fought my little brother Joey. So, and Pepper, I think, used to date his sister. So we know the families very well and so forth, but we do have some similarities there. And Dickie Eklund is trying to come out to the wild card, and I'm thinking about giving him a job as a trainer, one of my assistants. So I told him, you know, I'm going to do drug testing now. They're good people.
Yeah. I'm going to give you my last question. My last question is, Antonio Margarito, there has been a rumor that if the next fight after Joshua, if he can't get, you know, Floyd or Shane, you guys were thinking about maybe getting in with Antonio Margarito. Is there any truth to that? And what are your thoughts and how do you feel about Antonio Margarito and the whole plaster of Paris?
You know, Antonio Margarito, I mean, I like him. I even tried to help him at one time because he did come. He did talk to me about how he was innocent. I have a hard time believing that he was innocent. And at this point in my life, you know, I got to say that, you know, you're very aware as a fighter what's going on. I mean, fighters, you know, if you get a plaster of Paris in your hand, you're going to feel it. And I just think he maybe should be banned for life. And a lot of people might be pissed off about that, but that, you know, the thing is, Panama Lewis and Louis Resto, they're banned for life, and, you know, they did a similar crime. I mean, let's face it, you know, an elbow or a headbutt or, you know, something like that is part of boxing, but like taking padding out of the glove of plaster Paris and hand wraps, that's attempted murder, because this is a, you know, a hard sport. So the thing was, it was talk about I just heard that he was going to be on the undercard, but nobody approached me about Manny fighting him. But I will say this: before he was beaten, after Manny beat Oscar, and before Margarita fought Shane, Manny told me that he wanted to fight him next. That's who he wanted, and everybody says, "Oh, Manny, he's way too big for you." And he saw the same thing Shane did, I guess, because he told me, he says, "No, I'll destroy him." He said, "That's who I want." Manny Pacquiao wanted that fight next after Oscar, but you know, Shane got to him first, of course. And the thing about him, I mean, it's so controversial, and you know, obviously they wouldn't get away with it with us. But it'd be a good matchup. But I think a lot of people in the world don't think he should be licensed anymore, and I might be one of them. I am one of them, and I don't think we have any interest in that fight. But if the numbers are right, Manny did want to fight him at one time, but nobody's approached Manny about that because we haven't talked about that at all.
What's going to be your prediction for March 13, Freddie? What's your prediction on that fight with Joshua Cloddy?
You know, I know Clyde's a real tough guy, and he's got a good chin. But the game plan we have and the accumulation of punches that he's going to receive, I honestly think we can make him quit. I think we're going to be the first person to stop him, and maybe he'll be the referee. I don't think we'll knock him out, but we will stop him inside the 12.
Oh, man, I cannot wait, Freddie. Hey, Freddie, thanks very much, man, for calling in and chopping it up with us here on Leaving the Ring, brother. I can't wait to have you on again whenever you have time. I wish you all the best and the luck in the world with your upcoming fight number 13 against the Ghana Warrior, Joshua Cloddy.
Thank you very much, and thanks for all your support, and you guys are great. Thanks a lot.
All right, brother. You take it easy, man.
All right.
Well, there you go. We had Freddie Roach with us on the line and answered a lot of questions that we wanted to talk about and ask him. You know, unfortunately, you know, I know some people wanted to know about the whole steroid scandal, but really, honestly, I thought that was played out already. I've heard it several times in different interviews. I kind of wanted to go in a different direction and ask him about other things that were happening in the fight world and really coming out of his gym. Chris, what do you think, brother?
Yeah, and, you know, he did address it a little bit. You know, there's nothing that we're going to hear from Freddie that hasn't already been discussed. And people that, you know, believe Manny are going to believe Manny, and people that believe what Floyd's saying are going to believe Floyd, you know, so it doesn't really matter. But I think that you addressed a pretty wide range of topics, and, you know, we pretty much got to talk about all the fighters that he's training, you know, and he did go over a lot about the Claudy bout. So I thought it was a really good interview. So, you know, I don't think there was really anything that was missed out on. Although I did want to kind of press him a little more on Khan facing Bradley, but, you know, I don't know. I mean, poor Timothy, he just can't seem to get a break.
Hey, I know, man. But, you know, we're going to have him on again. We did talk to, you know, well, I was talking to Freddie before the show, and I was talking to his PR. We are going to have him on again. We're going to be doing another Sunday edition show next week. We're going to do a roundtable for the Manny Pacquiao versus Joshua Calati. So you guys are going to definitely have to want to tune into that fight, I mean, into that show, because we have a lot of surprise guests coming in through for that show. A lot of world right now present champions and former champions coming through, and, you know, premier writers that are going to come through on the roundtable on the show. But we got a surprise guest calling in at 3 o'clock, so you want to stay on the line. We got a lot of fight news to report, and I know Chris has got his MMA news to talk about later on the show. So stay tuned. We'll be right back, man, after this short break.
With a rider, the West Coast Messiah named Old Cruz, riding with them chrome tunes, ball headed all fool. The Lang Kid bringing LA back, bringing Gully back, homie, the streets back. And I'ma take a little pressure off game. If he's the face, I'm the voice of LA. Cause ever since I came, the whole West Side ain't been the same. Even Snoop Dogg saying my name. Let me spell it out. O-M-A-R. Cruz, motherfucker, I'm a shooting star. Cause I shoot these balls like I'm shooting cars. On the 4-5 freeway, cut me off. I dare you. I'm from the land of the pull up and spray. Where they pull up and say, where you from, S.A.? Yeah, only the sickest of my vocals get laid. And if it ain't the good doctor, must be cool and drink.
Give me a 6-4 with some hydro. Watch the low jump around.
Homie, what's that sound?
It ain't nothing but that gangsta music.
Uh-huh.
It ain't nothing but that gangsta music.
Yeah.
Let the top down, homie, pop the trunk, let the speakers go. The whole world know that sound, cause it ain't nothing but that gangsta music.
Uh-huh.
It ain't nothing but that gangsta music.
Yeah. I spit for everyday hustlers, 9-to-5ers juggling green and white, just to make them things right. Customers fiend tonight. The ghetto bird flies above us, heard a couple shots, just another day on my LA block. Police harass me cause my Cadillac blasting up, and in my stash had the 4-4 hidden in the back. They couldn't find a damn thing, nothing on me, so I've always been and still is. Motherfuck the police.
Yeah.
That's how we live, and I just spit it how I see it. For every blood, they killing another crip, deleted another homie. You're seeing consecutive life sentences. Even if they breathing, ain't no sunshine, believe it. I keep it hood, cause I got the whole style is mobster. Even me, I destroy your whole roster. Try and stop it. These land kings on the rise. Any questions, that's my Smith and Wesson. It's B-Y-I.
Give me a 6-4 with some hydro. Watch the low low jump around.
Homie, what's that sound?
It ain't nothing but that gangsta music.
Uh-huh.
It ain't nothing but that gangsta music.
Yeah.
Let the top down, homie, pop the trunk, let the speakers go. The whole world know that sound, cause it ain't nothing but that gangsta music.
Uh-huh.
It ain't nothing but that gangsta music.
Yeah.
It's like a new change of armor, the god is a full decider. We riders riding the storm with flood and walking on water. You wildin', homie, we bindin' you, rolling up on the side of you. Never knew we was there, homie, surprise on you. Cause on the west side, we ain't got a test drive. 6-4 at the shop, roll the 645. Or the double R, all suede headline. Don't fuck with dimes no more, strictly 25. That's under 25, we roll on 25. Inch chrome rims, hollow tips in my 25. Baby, wanna ride, one day, 20 times. She and her friends saying, Omar, you a nasty guy. I know this mine, just another day in the life. Bullets, raw speaks, and plenty dollar signs. Cause if it don't make sense, then it's a waste of time. Old crew, cut the check, bitch, this is P.Y.
Give me a 6-4 with some hydro, watch the low jump around.
Homie, what's that sound?
It ain't nothing but that
low load in my form on the roof, jamming in the candle.
You're listening to
At night I can't sleep, I toss and turn. Candlesticks in the dark, visions of bodies being burned. Four walls just staring at a nigga. I'm paranoid sleeping with my finger on the trigger. My mother's always stressing I ain't living right, but I ain't going out without a fight. See, every time my eyes close, I start sweating and blood starts coming out my nose. If somebody watching the act, but I don't know who it is, so I'm watching my back. I can see him when I'm deep in the covers. When I awake, I don't see the motherfucker. He owns a black hat like I own, a black suit and a cane like my own. Some might say take a chill, B, but fuck that shit. There's a nigga trying to kill me. I'm popping in the clip when the wind blows. Every 20 seconds got me peeping out my window. Investigating a joint for traps, taking my telephone to test. I'm staring at the woman on the corner. It's fucked up when your mind's playing tricks on you. I make big money, I drive big cars, everybody know me. It's like I'm a movie star, but late at night, something ain't right. I feel I'm being tailed by the same sucker's headlights. That move that I ran off the block, or is it that nigga last week that I shot, or is it the one I beat for $5,000? Thought he had cane, but it was gold, not a flower. Just under my feet, grab my papa for the suckers. Ain't no use in the line, I was scared of a motherfucker. Put the left in the Popeyes and burn down quick. If it's going down, let's get this shit over with. Here they come, just like I figured. I got my hand on the motherfucking trigger. When I saw, make your ass start giggling. Three blind, crippling, crazy senior fitters. I live by the sword. I take my boys everywhere I go because I'm paranoid. I keep looking over my shoulder, peeping around corners. My mind is playing tricks on me. Day by day it's more impossible to cope. I feel like I'm the one that's doing dope. Can't keep a steady hand because I'm nervous. Every Sunday morning I'm in service, praying for forgiveness and trying to find an exit out the business. I know the Lord is looking at me, but yet and still it's hard for me to feel happy. I often drift when I drive, having fatal thoughts of suicide. Bang and get it over with, and then I'm worry-free, but that's bullshit. I got a little boy to look after, and if I die, then my child will be a bastard. I had a woman down with me, but to me it seems like she was down to get me. She helped me out in this shit, but to me she was just another bitch. Now she's back with her mother. Now I'm realizing that I love her. Now I'm feeling lonely. My mind is playing tricks on me.
Fell on the weekend, me and Ghetto Boys are trick-or-treating, robbing little kids for bags, till an old man got behind our ass. So we speeded up the pace, took a look back, and he was right before our face. He'd be in for a squabble, no doubt, so I swung and hit the nigga in his mouth. He was going down, we figured, but this wasn't no ordinary nigga. He stood about 6 or 7 feet, now that's the nigga I be seeing in my sleep. We triple teamed on them, dropping them motherfucking bees on them. The more I swung, the more blood flew. Then he disappeared, and my boy
boys disappeared too. Then I felt just like a fiend. It wasn't even close to Halloween. It was dark as fuck on the street. My hands were all bloody from punching on the concrete. Goddamn, homie. My mind is playing tricks on me.
All right, man, we're back, and we're still going to be waiting a little bit for our next guest to call in. It's a special guest, you know, but I do want to touch some stuff a little bit that we had covered last Thursday. You know, if you didn't have time to check out the show last Thursday, we had Sergio Martinez, and we had Kermit Cintron, and the young kid that we were talking to Freddie Roach about, Jose Benavides Jr. The other thing that we did, we announced that the Arthur Abraham and Andre Durrell fight was called off. It's been postponed for a later date in March. The fight's going to happen. But if you didn't see this, if you don't go check out the LeaveItInTheRing.com site, then you missed that we had an exclusive interview with the head trainer, the uncle of Andre Durrell, of him explaining what happened to his back. You know, I'm going to play a little bit of a clip later on today about Andre Durrell pulling out of the fight. And this Thursday coming up, they have promised me that he'll be on, too, to talk a little bit about what happened to his back and about his match coming up with Arthur Abraham. So hopefully you guys tune into that there. There's a lot of fight news to cover, you know, out there. So I'll get right into the fight news really, really quick before we have our next guest call in and get an interview with him, all right? And so let's go down real quick, man. There's been a lot of stuff in boxing happening. First off, in Miami, the former WBA champ Adam Bones, he was stopped in the fourth round. You know, he's still fighting. He was stopped by a veteran out of Mexico, Edad Ruiz, Friday night. The bout was stopped, being that Adam was dropped twice. So the ref steps into the bout at the 155 mark. You know, and what Ruiz got out of it, he gained the WBO NBA belt. You know, former bantamweight champ William Gonzalez, 24-3 in 20 knockouts, wins a 12-round decision over Jesus Vasquez. Vasquez was dropped in the second round, was outpointed with the scorecards of 117, 110, 119, 108 twice. You know, what Gonzalez gained out of that was getting the WBO Latino belt, you know. Edner Cherry, if you don't know Edner Cherry, is a contender that stepped in with Timothy Bradley and had success in dropping Timothy Bradley early in the rounds. Well, he KOs Heveson Herrera in the 149-second mark in the first round Friday night in Tampa, Florida. That was really considered a very impressive win, seeing that he's trying to make a comeback and make his name, you know, a household name, trying to get himself back into a title fight contingency. So him blowing out his opponent in the first round at the 149-second mark is obviously good for him. Right, Chris?
I can't really support anyone beating up a Herrera.
I was going to ask you if it was one of your cousins, Doug.
No, man. If he lost, he ain't one of my cousins. Even if he was, I'm not. I'm just claiming him. I'm disowning him.
Yeah. Unbeaten junior middleweight Sean Porter was on Friday Night Fights. I don't know if you guys were able to check that out, but he was successful in a 10-round unanimous decision. He's 13-0 and take 10 KOs. His win was over Russell Jordan. It was in Cleveland, Iowa. A point was deducted, though, from Russell in the ninth round. Chris, I don't know, did you watch that fight? He was deducted because of his mouthpiece. There was something going on with his mouthpiece. He keeps spitting it out, kept falling out, so the ref, you know, played at a halt and deducted a point from him. But it really didn't matter for points being deducted because, you know, the scorecard was 97-92 twice for Sean Porter and 108-89. So it was complete. It was a complete shutout for Jordan, unfortunately.
You know, first off on that referee and the mouthpiece, that was complete BS. Even Teddy Atlas and Joe Chestor pointed at the moment, it was incidental. The mouthpiece got knocked out from punches. It wasn't like he was spitting it out like Diego Corrales was intentionally. So the point deduction, I mean, at the end of the night, it was inconsequential, but it was not called for. I mean, it's just a bit of biased refereeing being that they were in Porter's home area. But it was a good performance by Porter. But I think fans and even the Teddy Atlas and them expected him to be a little bit more impressive. You know, Jordan's technique is pretty it's a little bit lacking in the refinement stage. And you know, it's a good win for Porter, but maybe not the showcase that a lot of people were expecting for him. I don't know. I mean, when I first saw the fight, I was like, this looks like a young Shane Mosley, like a little Shane Mosley. But he's going to have to step it up a little bit if he wants to be compared to Shane Mosley inside the ring.
Yeah, that's for sure. You know, that's a hard build, you know, to try to replica is Shane Mosley right now. But, you know, man, I don't know what's going on with me today, man. I can't, for some reason, I can't just seem to get the words flowing out of my mouth, Chris. You know, I think it's because it's Sunday and it's early, and normally I don't get going until like 5 o'clock. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man, I hear you. You're used to those Saturday, late night, Saturday night, Sunday morning hangovers, bro.
You know, that's what it is, you know. I mean, Saturday night, obviously, we had a lot of fights, you know, happening out there. Eloy Rojas defends his title against former champion Goody Espadas in a 12-round unanimous decision, 120-108 and 119-109 twice. Going over a former champion like Goody Espadas, I don't know what exactly do you really prove when you're stepping in with a veteran like that doesn't belong in the ring no longer. Should have hung up the gloves, Chris.
Yeah, well, you know how it is in boxing. I mean, I believe it was sent on the Facing Ali documentary. I believe it was on there. You know, these fighters always think that they have one last chest in them. You know, they always think they can go out there one more time, you know, and really test themselves. And unfortunately, they usually most learn more often than not that it's not the case, you know.
You're right, man. You're absolutely right. Undefeated heavyweight, 18-0 and 15 KOs. He went in a full 8 rounds with the journeyman, Dennis McKinley. First off, that undefeated heavyweight name is Kurtson Mansfield, you know, and he went in and he went in with a veteran, went 8 rounds completely. He won a unanimous decision, so it's good for him seeing another heavyweight trying to come up into the game, undefeated heavyweight, because we definitely need all the heavyweights we can get right now at this moment in this shallow pool of heavyweights that are out there right now. Right, for Americans in that case, you know what I mean? Not for the UK guys or anybody else in Europe, but for the Americans. And our point in the Americans, we do not have a lot of heavyweights except for Chris Nightmare.
I'm actually, you know, I'm always skeptical of American heavyweights. No disrespect, but I see big records and I see American heavyweights and, I can't get excited by American heavyweights. I'm sorry. There's just a type of the guys that are already out there, like Chambers and Areola. Anyone coming up, until I see them and I'm sorry, I'm not excited for any American heavyweights other than the guys that are already on the scene.
Absolutely, man. If you want to call into the show, you can call in at 347-215-7598. That's terrible, Chris. You know, being that we're American, we're not too excited about the American heavyweights because we don't have full faith in them. You know, when there's no belief in them right now that we're going to get a good heavyweight at any time soon. You know, that's kind of – it's sad in a way, don't you think? Sad in a way that we're all thinking like that for some reason right now. None of us really are hopeful that there's going to be a heavyweight, a savior – for the American heavyweights at this moment, right?
In a way it is, but I think I'm not sad. I mean, I don't really care. I mean, if the Klitschko's, them not being American, it doesn't really bother me at all. But it's just the fact that if there were a really successful American heavyweight out there right now, the sport would be getting a lot more exposure over here in the U.S. You know, they always say the sport goes as the heavyweights go, and if there was a Mike Tyson, Evander Holyfield, you know, Riddick Bowe, they'd be getting more exposure for heavyweight boxing in the United States. And, you know, unless Areola or Chambers win a title, we're just not going to see that exposure over here as much as we should, or as much as we'd like to see it. You want to see some good American heavyweights watch UFC.
Well, that's what I was about to go say right now. You know, if there were any good American heavyweights, I don't think the UFC or any of the MMA, organizations would be as successful as they are right now at this moment.
Yeah, man, they got Brock Lesnar, and after last night, they got a young Mexican heavyweight, Cain Velasquez, on the rise. So, I mean, they're definitely stepping the game up, you know. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see in the next 10 to 15 years if, you know, big, young, strong American guys, heavyweight guys, if they go more towards boxing or mixed martial arts now.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Time will only tell, man. Let's get back into the boxing news, Chris, before you start going into your MMA rant. Fast Fezo Kendo scores a 9th round TKO over Demetrius King Saturday night, wins the NABA USBA belts. Okay, so he gets in there. Fezo Kendo, who's a Puerto Rican descent, gets in there and does his job. And I guess he's trying to do exactly what John Ruiz is right now doing, get a title shot himself. You know, what's your thoughts about Fredo Kendo here, Chris?
My thoughts, if he gets a title shot, he's not going to win. No disrespect to Fredo Kendo. He's got some skills. I actually thought he beat James Toney when they fought about a year and a half ago on Versus. I actually thought he won that fight and got robbed. But, you know, Fred, I don't know if he's got the most work ethic. He's got good skills, doesn't really have any power, doesn't have a lot of chin. And, you know, he's good in this era of heavyweights, but he's just not elite top caliber. I couldn't see him beating either of the Klitschkos. And, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing him fight a Chris Arreola, though, but I think that'd be a good matchup, you know, Mexico and Puerto Rico. But I just don't see him capturing a title, even in this watered-down era of heavyweights.
Dave Chen, writer for Leave It in the Ring. Brother, what's your thoughts about Fredo Kendo?
Nothing that hasn't already been said. You know, I thought he had a couple good chances to look good on TV. You know, unfortunately, couldn't get a decision, and the man doesn't have a name. The man is an American fighter, and American fighters aren't doing too good these days in terms of popularity. I mean, you know, what can I say? I don't think he's going to make it. Even if he gets a shot, you know, he's not good enough.
Yeah, you know, at one time he was considered somebody that can actually do something, and unfortunately, like most of the other heavyweights that we're promising have fallen apart, you know, like Michael Grant. Remember Michael Grant? Mm. Does anybody remember him? You know, this guy definitely fit. He had the look of a champion, but he just didn't seem to have the chin or the heart of a champion. You know, so definitely I understand where a lot of people are coming from when we talk about past heavyweights that had their time and their moment of showing or shining in front of the fight fans, in front of the crowd, in front of the community, and they didn't. They end up slipping and falling, and, you know, now pretty much everybody has turned their cheek. Whatever cheek you want to turn, go right ahead. All right, let's go down with Daniel Ponce de Leon, the guy that was blown out by Juanma Lopez. He got back into the ring Saturday night as well. He's up 38 wins, 2 losses and 33 KOs. You know, got a win over Orlando Cruz in the third round. It was stopped at the 237th mark into the, let me see, what round was it? Oh, I just said it, in the third round. He wins the WBC Latino Featherweight belt. What, I mean, the WBC Latino Featherweight belt. I don't get it. I don't understand that. Dave Chen, what are your thoughts about this whole Latino bout? I mean, why?
I mean, it's WBC, right? You know, they like their sanctioning fees. I mean, they're just making stuff up again. Do we really?
Is there another type of WBC bout? Like, is there a WBC Caucasian belt, or is there a WBC African American belt? Or
I don't know, because when they say Latino, do they mean like South American belt, or what do they mean, like the ethnicity? You know what I mean?
Exactly. You know what I mean? But should there be a WBC Latino? I mean, isn't that kind of being a little man? What's the word I'm looking for, Chris? I mean, isn't
discriminatory?
That, yeah, you know. I mean, I don't know. Chris, what do you think?
I think that's a pretty good point. I mean, the WBC is the organization based out of Mexico. So, but yeah, I mean, I don't understand. There is no, you know, there's not like the WBC Junior African American Lightweight title, or the, you know, the WBA, you know, Caucasian American or Caucasian or European American title. So I don't know. I mean, I don't. It basically, what it comes down to is just another way to get a sanctioning fee. It's a ridiculous title. I can't even believe that the guys that win these titles really hold those belts in high regard, even if they wear them on TV and their backers hold them up in the background. But I don't know. I mean, anything that comes out of these organizations, I'm not really that appalled by or, you know, really upset with, because I think they're all kind of a joke, in all honesty.
But you know what, man? I mean, before I continue on the news that are happening right now all around the world in boxing, I want to kind of put this up. I mean, I think we're the only sport that can get away with something like that. I mean, if you really think about it, I was talking to somebody, a fight fan, okay? And I had a long, good conversation, and I had mentioned this a long time ago when we barely started the radio show, Leave It in the Ring, okay? It was probably one of our second or third segments. I can't really remember, but I had said this one time, and I kind of want to touch into it again, because seeing this right now, the WBC Latino belt, and seeing it kind of thrown out there a lot. I'm looking at some news, and I see a lot of Latino belt, Latino this, or, you know, the Commonwealth or whatever. what other sport? And you might, if you want to call in and tell me what other sport does this, please do. You know, 347-215-7598. What other sport do you know of at this moment can get away with this type of put out the same racism? I mean, we're the only sport that you see Mexico versus Puerto Rico, Mexico versus Philippines, the United Kingdom versus Americans, you know, where they really try to divide the promoters and the people that are handling these sanctions. They really try to divide people to make them come in and buy tickets. I mean, the fight alone, shouldn't that just be it already? The fight alone, Chris?
Yeah, but, you know, it's about national pride. I mean, I don't think that they necessarily are gearing and, you know, making the races hate one another. And I don't think that's what you're insinuating either. But, you know, it's all about national pride and stuff. I mean, look at the Olympics. That's what that's about. It's about supporting your country against the other countries. And soccer, which is a sport I'm not really a fan of, but their fan bases are really passionate. You know, it's country versus country. So sometimes they do use the angle in the wrong way as, you know, evidenced by when Jerry Cooney fought Larry Holmes. That was completely marketed the wrong way. But for the most part, I think it's done not to be it's good-natured for the most part. The fans get a little excessive with it, especially in certain rivalries, like you said, with Mexico versus Puerto Rico and the Philippines. You know, Manny and Floyd's fans get a little bit racist with it. But I don't think it's too bad. You know, it's just part of the sport.
When you see a guy walking around in the mall, Chris, and you see a guy that wears a Mexicutioner shirt, you're telling me right there that you don't take that a little bit of offense?
I'm Mexican. Why would I take it offensive?
Yeah, but, if, you know, okay, a Filipino guy wearing a shirt, showing a Mexican laid out. And it says
Mexicutioner. Yeah, I'm going to get hit. But it depends. I don't know. I mean, if it's a boxing shirt and it had Manny Pacquiao on it, he had Marquez, Barrera, and Morales all laid out, and it said, the Mexicutioner. What can I say? Manny Pacquiao beat those guys. He is the Mexicutioner.
I'm just saying, this seems like the only sport that we can literally get away. Dave Chen, what are your thoughts about that, brother?
I thought the soccer analogy is really good because, you know, those are also worldwide international sports, and part of their success depends on rivalries. I mean, you got people in England with their soccer teams that think other cities are almost like mortal foreign enemies. You know what I mean? You know, it's just part of sports rivalry. You know, just because I don't agree with it, you know, doesn't mean, you know, it doesn't happen. Doesn't mean, you know, that's not what everybody else thinks. Personally, I'm okay with it. You know, people are going to feel that way. You know, most of the time it's harmless fun. Some people take it too seriously, but they're really the minority. At least I would like to believe they're the minority.
I think so. I think you might be right. You know, I think they are the minority of it, but sometimes that minority can come up right behind you and take over with you not at least being aware of it. You know what I'm saying? But anyways, let's move on with the boxing. I just thought that was a little. I just wanted to see some of you guys' feedback about that because I was thinking about that. Like I said, I was talking to a fight fan. I believe it was yesterday. I'm not really sure. I think it was yesterday. I was talking to a fight fan about it, and we were just having a deep discussion about that. Anyways, so undefeated Lucas Martin Mathesis, 26-0, no losses, 24 KOs, TKOs, vicious Vivian Harris, who was signed recently, the Golden Boy, you know, and he was knocked out in the fourth round in the 2 minute and 44 second mark. It was believed it was premature. Harris obviously protested it, but it kept the young undefeated fighter keep going with his streak. You know, looks like a big, big puncher. I don't know if anybody was able to witness that fight, but if you didn't, go ahead and try to find it somewhere on YouTube or whatnot, and wherever you can find it, and take a look at this kid and see. 26. No losses and 24 KOs, you know. Kind of feel bad for Vivian Harris, who used to be trained by Emmanuel Stewart and was signed the Golden Boy recently, seeing that maybe him, you know, I'm thinking Vivian Harris thinking, like, cool, I'm signed with Golden Boy. I'm signed with one of the premier, promoters out there. I now can only just climb up. You know, there's got to be something good because at one time, Vivian Harris was a promising prospect. At one time, a lot of people thought that this guy was going to make an impact in his division and in the sport, but it just seems that he keeps falling short at everything that he does. Chris, any thoughts about him?
There was a time when he was one of the top junior welterweights. He never really got the big fight. And ever since he lost, got stopped by, I believe, Carlos Mausa, he's never been the same.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I remember that, man. And you know what? That was if that was an upset, I don't know if anybody considered that an upset, but I thought it was an upset because he was supposed to handle him, having, you know, Emmanuel Stewart, and you never see Emmanuel Stewart really get really animated. You know, he was pulling the Teddy Atlas at the corner with him.
Yeah, it was an upset at the time, you know, and I think it was an upset, but, you know, like I said, that was Vivian Harris's high point at his career, and it ended up being his low point, you know, and since then it's been all downhill. You know, you always think that, you know, like you said, you look at Vivian Harris, you're like, oh, he signs the Golden Boy, or oh, he's fighting this guy, or Vivian Harris is going to be on TV, you kind of get excited, but it's pretty clear watching him fight now that his legs just aren't there as much as they used to be, and he just doesn't have the same pop in his punches.
I mean, what do you do? I mean, what, you know, where do you go from there, Dave Chin, when you get yourself in a position of now to start making some serious money and getting in with a promoter that has, I mean, this guy, I mean, Golden Boy fills up all their months with television dates already. You know, they pretty much have HBO locked down. They pretty much have pay-per-view slots whenever they want. They can pretty much put a card up in Vegas at any time they feel like it. And you're thinking, okay, great. I'm getting in now with the big boys. You know, I was with the big boys. I fell apart, but now I'm getting my bearings back. I get in the ring, and you get knocked out. Where do you go from there?
You know, it's interesting because, you know, it don't matter who you are, as long as you're signed with Golden Boy, I figure you'd get on TV at least once or twice a year and make the paycheck at least in the hundreds of thousands, right? You know, something decent you can show for. But it's interesting. I would like to know the story behind this fight that he just had where he was stopped, because, you know, I want to know if, you know, was the other guy a Golden Boy fighter too? Like, was this a Golden Boy thing?
You know what, man? I was thinking the same exact thing. I'm not really, really sure, you know, but I'm thinking that he was. And you know what? We mentioned this, you know, you had Nate Campbell signing with them, Vivian Harris. Who else was signed recently to Golden Boy? And I can't remember all the names, but they were all put into this one little pot. And I said, are these guys really signed to make them stars? I mean, they're almost on their way out. Or are they signed to be stepping stones for the fighters that are, you know, have more of a promising, you know.
They gotta be killing two birds with one stone with most of these guys. I mean, obviously, you know, anybody who's into the boxing game can see that when they sign somebody like Vivian Harris, they probably give them to one of the guys coming up, maybe like a Maricom, maybe a Victor Ortiz, something like that, right? And that way, you know, not only does their more promising fighter get one more name on their record, but they also get all the money from that air date, you know, because, you know, they wouldn't have to co-promote with anybody. You know, it'd be both guys from Golden Boy, and they can pocket all the proceeds.
Yeah, that's for sure, man. Let's see. Let me get a fight fan on the line and see what he thinks about this whole thing with Vivian Harris or anything else that we talked about in the boxing news. Area code 909, brother, what's your name and where are you calling from? And tell me what's up.
Hey, what's good? It's Brian Shine. Hey, yeah, man, I mean, Vivian Harris, I think what he should do is just pick himself back up, man, and just get some fights underneath his belt. Don't do too much of difficulty and get his confidence back. And if he keeps getting knocked out, he needs to hang up the gloves.
Yeah, you know, he keeps getting knocked out. You need to hang up the gloves. Let's go with my other co-host out of Puerto Rico, Rob Riddler. Rob, what's your thoughts, man? What's going on, brother?
No, I'm just fucking around on the chat room, but Vivian Harris to me is always a bum. He's been a bum for a long minute now. You know, he was just one of ESPN fighters that never made it out of ESPN. Every time he got out of there, he lost. Any fighter that Golden Boy signs right now that has Harris in his name or Campbell in his name is a stepping stone for guys like Ortiz and all that whatnot.
You know what's funny, too, is that I don't know if you remember this, but Victor Ortiz was supposed to step in with Vivian Harris, and that didn't materialize and ended up falling apart, you know. And, man, that's a tough
one. Yo, Dave, man.
Yeah.
I think Vivian was the opponent. This cat's 25-0. This guy he lost to, he's
undefeated. Oh, yeah.
So I don't know if he's signed with Golden Boy or not, but there's no doubt Vivian was brought in as a name and just an opponent for whoever this guy is. It's this Lucas Mathisi kid.
Mathisi, yeah. I mean, he was definitely the guy that was supposed to win this match. I mean, he goes in there and he's got a high ratio of knockouts on his belt. You know, it makes you, man, I mean, this is what's really terrible about boxing sometimes is that, you know, when you need the money, You got to take on whatever you can, because in boxing, a lot of these fighters that go in the gym, you know, and they train their whole lives, you know, no matter what age, you know, a lot of the fighters start at an early age. Even if you start in your teens, you really don't really know how the world really works completely. You know, it's easy to talk, you know, smack about particular fighters, you know, and say this and that, but really, if you're not in that gym 24/7, they exclude themselves from the real world, meaning that they exclude themselves of getting a real job. They exclude themselves about getting an education. So they depend. This is their trade. You know, if you're like being a tradesman, okay, they have nothing to fall back on. It's like that saying when your mom tells you, go to school because you're going to need it. Because you're going to, if you can't succeed, if you're trying to be a fighter or you're trying to be a singer or you're trying to be a rapper, if you got nothing to fall back on your dream of getting you success and you don't make it to that finish line of success, guess what? You need something to fall back on. And a lot of these fighters don't have that. They don't have that resource of falling back on, so they end up becoming a stepping stone later on in their careers because they can't walk away from the sport. If they didn't make millions of dollars like a Manny Pacquiao, Shane Mosley, or a Floyd Mayweather, or Oscar De La Hoya, and so on and so on, they're not going to succeed in the real world, Chris. You know what I'm talking about, brother?
Yeah, I always wonder where a lot of these fighters go afterwards, you know. I don't know, I think Vivian Harris needs to get out the game. He had that fight on Friday Night Fights last year where there was a head clash or something, and he went down in the corner, and it looked like something was wrong with his brain, and they stopped the fight. You know, I mean, I know you want to try to make some money, and, you know, that's only your only career path. Maybe you don't really have anything else set, but, man, your health and your family's got to come first.
Yeah, definitely. You know, your health and your family, you know, and that's why, man, it's really sad sometimes when you see a fighter, become this so-called stepping stone or whatever the case is, because he needs the money. You know, you sit there and you go like, man, why does this guy keep fighting? Look at Bone Adams, you know, you got to sit there and you think, okay, Bone Adams, I remember him. He gave, what was that, Paulie Ayala, fit, beat him in the first fight, you know, but was the fight not given to him and gets him in the rematch, he loses it, but he's continuing the fight, seeing that, hey, you know what, I need the money. It could either be I need the money or I just can't walk away from the sport. Dave Chen?
Yeah, that's just like our sport. You know, I always have mixed feelings about our sport. You know, it's just so cruel sometimes, right? You know, guys gotta sacrifice themselves for money, and sometimes, you know, guys will get sacrificed for somebody else's money. You know, that's just the most painful part, and you know, it's just something you don't want to think about, but you can't ignore it. If you watch boxing, you know, it's just like you gotta be able to live with the uglier side, you know, otherwise, you know, don't be a fan. And honestly, a lot of fight writers, a lot of people who are involved with boxing, you know, after years, they give up on it. You know what I mean? They say it's just a little bit too much, the negative sides of it.
Definitely, you know. We're still waiting for our special guest to call in, you know. But I tell you what, before we even, if we don't get him right now, I want to go back into the Andre Durrell and Arthur Abraham. It was postponed for, I believe, March 27th. I want to say that's March 27th. What I'm going to do right now, I'm going to play the exclusive interview that we did with him, with his camp, Friday morning, okay? And then get everybody's thoughts about that, and then get some fight fans' thoughts about it. If you want to call into the show, 347-215-7598. That number again is 347-215-7598. 9-8.
This is exclusive from Ring and Ring.
On March 6th, after all, about a back injury.
All strain. You know, in a fight like this, we got to definitely be 100%. So. He hurt his back a little bit. It's not nothing too serious, but we have to be 100% going into a fight like this. We respect Arthur Abraham, and we respect the boxing game enough to, you know, not go in there, not even 95%. When we're going to step in that ring, there's not going to be nothing in this head that's not telling him he's 100%. He will be.
Right, absolutely. I agree with you. Let me ask you this. Is this something that's happened before in his camp, or is this something newly that just occurred?
No, it's something newly that occurred while sparring. He didn't really even notice it during sparring,
hope he recovers quickly. And do you guys know of the date when it's been pushed to, or is that still in negotiations?
Well, we're waiting to hear a date. But we definitely want to give it some time to heal. Like, he still feels it there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not nothing. You know, he can still walk around and everything. It's not nothing. So, you know, it's not nothing real major like that. But like I said, again, he has to be 100%. You know, it was very sore, and it wasn't nothing like, you know, just from working sore. It was like a pool sore, you know, so.
Absolutely. Let me ask you this, though. So in an injury like this, and you're being his head trainer, how far back do you guys want to push the fight? I mean, it's like a two-month out thing, three-month out, to be properly prepared for Arthur Abraham.
As far as shape, he's ready. As far as conditioning, he's ready to go now. You know what I'm saying? We was basically coasting into that fight, you know, because he was sparring at the last week, 8 4-minute rounds with 30-second rest, you know, up against guys that's for real pressure fighters. So he was ready to go. I was going to step it up to 10 4-minute rounds this week, you know, with 30-second rest. And once I've seen that, you know, that's really what I needed to see to go 12 rounds, 3 minutes, you know, with Arthur Abraham, because it's not like he's a serious pressure fighter, you know what I'm saying? He's a couple-hour guy, but it's not like a pressure cooker type fighter, you know what I'm saying? It's not that. And, with the guys we got in there, they don't stop coming forward. I mean, they taking punishment, you know, and they keep coming forward. So, I'm keeping Andre busy. I'm seeing what I need to see, and he's ready. I'm not worried about his condition. But back to the question, what you asked as far as how far do I want to push it back, I just got to play it by ear, you know, play it by how he feels. You know, as a matter of fact, we're here at the fitness center going to do something now, you know what I'm saying? Not preparing to his back, you know, far as, you know, putting any more strain on his back, but we're not just going to take this time off and not do anything, you know what I'm saying? We're going to do something, you know, of course not nothing to aggravate his back, but, you know, we're going to stay busy and stay in some type of condition. We're not just going to lay around, still eating healthy. Got the nutritionist and cook here with us. So, you know, our routine hasn't changed. But, like, again, he has to be 100%.
Absolutely. But, hey, Leon, I really appreciate you taking the time, brother, and, give us a quote about what happened between Doral. I wish him a speedy recovery.
Well, I thank you, and I don't think it'll be too long, so we're going to give the fans what they're looking for.
Hey, man, I can't wait, brother. I'll call you then. I'll call you a couple days before Thursday just to give you a reminder and to get Doral on, and hopefully we can get you on, too, at the same time.
Okay, cool.
All right, well, Ben, well, just give me a call, and we'll work it out.
Okay, brother. I'll talk to you later.
Well, there you go, man. You got to hear exactly what Leon had to say about his fighter, Andre Doral, not being able to follow through with their March 6th fight against Arthur Abraham. Chris, I'd like to hear what your thoughts about that. You know, I know we did. I got to say this real quick. A lot of the exclusive stuff, we're not going to be putting it up on YouTube anymore. It's just going to go directly on the website. So you want to go to the website and check it out, leaveandring.com. Go and check it out and check out the blogs and other stuff that we're going to be posting up. You know, we're always working and striving to make that site and every site that we got, a lot better and more informative to the fight fans. There will be blood and standandfight.com too. Chris, what's your take about them not wanting to step in on March 6th against Arthur Abraham?
My thoughts is whether it's something physical, it's a back issue, it's a little tweaking. Obviously, it can't be too severe if it's only being pushed off a couple weeks. You know, it's kind of like, I believe Floyd Mayweather had a similar situation when he was originally supposed to fight Juan Manuel Marquez, and they delayed the bout, but they delayed it like a month or two, not just a couple weeks. So whether it's something physical or something else going on, I don't know. But either way, it just makes me favor Abraham that much more going into the bout, because I think Abraham is 100% physically healthy, and I think he's a little bit more focused.
I'm going to go with Dave Chen, man. What do you think about him not wanting to step in there with Arthur Abraham? Obviously, he said some things in there that, yeah, you're right. You don't want to be 100%, but the push date is not that far along, Dave. I mean, if your back is really that injured, is having 2 or 3 weeks being out of a fight, is that going to help you that much, or is that not enough time to heal up your back?
Yeah, that's kind of a weird thing because, you know, any injury that's going to keep you from training is going to keep you for basically at least a month. You know, anybody who has played sports knows this. So it's kind of weird because when I first heard the news, you know, these two guys don't seem like the kind of guys who would let something random cancel a fight between those two. You know, they seem pretty straightforward guys. They got no bad blood. So there's really, you know, they're in a tournament. There's no reason not to fight. But then I hear about this back injury with Durrell, and, you know, I hope there's nothing more to it. You know, it's just, I mean, I really don't know what to say. I wouldn't be surprised, for example, if they came out and said, you know what, we thought we needed 2 weeks, we needed more time. If they don't come out and say that, then I'm going to question them a little bit. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, the thing about it is that, okay, that March 6th date is obviously a lot of people were disappointed. I know that I was disappointed about it not happening. But they're going to continue with the card itself, being that they're going to have Victor Chinian, you know, be the headliner of that fight. You know, Victor Chinian is going to be stepping in. So people that do have their tickets or have their hotels, you know, reserved for that event, you still be able to go see a good fight with Victor Chinian stepping in and trying to get his guy out of the way so that he can possibly get his big mega fight with, once again, Nonito Dornier. I know there's been a whole lot of talk about that. But going back with Durrell, man, I mean, look, the match has been moved to March 27th. I'm just curious about, you know, like you're saying right now, Dave, I mean, when you have a back injury, anybody has a back injury, you know, 2-3 weeks, and you're stepping in with probably one of the biggest punches, hardest punches right now at 160, Arthur Abraham, you know, and you want to be 100%, you know, and 2 or 3 weeks, and you're not, if you don't know the seriousness, you know, of your back injury, because having a back injury is a big thing, Chris, right? I mean, having a back injury, any little slight thing, you know, some tightness or whatever, let's say your back has some tightness to it, you're going to be skeptical about it. You know, I don't know if they went down to the doctors and checked it out, because if your back is stiff, you're not going to be as mobile as you want yourself to be in that ring, Chris.
Yeah, back's a tricky situation. I mean, boxing is a very, obviously, I mean, it goes without saying that's a very physical sport, and it's something that you could re-trigger pretty easily, I would assume. You know, I'm interested in watching the next episode of Fight Camp 360 in a couple of weeks to see if it's going to be covered in there at all, you know, that behind-the-scenes show. But the good thing is, the positive, the fight is going to happen. You know, the tournament's still intact. The negative is, I just hope that if Durrell loses, I hope there's no excuses because of the back.
You know, exactly. Well, God, that's just the big thing there. Is there going to be an excuse? Because obviously, you know, Durrell is the underdog stepping in with Arthur Abraham. Arthur Abraham has been in the United States since February 8th. He's been training, and he said he's disappointed himself. But, you know, I'll read you his quote. He said, you know, of course I was disappointed when I first heard of the postponement, but I am happy to take on Durrell on March 27th. I want him to be in his top shape so that he has no excuses once I am done with him. This is a Super 6 World Boxing Classic, but the best fighting against the best. So I can understand that he doesn't want to face me when he's not 100%. You know, and he says, I'm continuing. My training has gone very well thus far. I am in great shape, and I will defy my tournament lead against him. You know, obviously, Arthur Abraham is never shy away from words, and he's a very confident man. You know, and I don't know. I'm smelling excuses if he doesn't win this fight. You know, and I know that Durrell, like I said, he's the underdog, and it would be an upset if he was to beat Arthur Abraham, you know, which is not very far-fetched. Chris, do you agree with that? That's not very far-fetched. A lot of people thought that he was going to get blown out by fraud. We saw what happened there. He didn't get the win, but it was very, very controversial. And a lot of people are now saying that Arthur's going to walk all over him, But seeing that, you know, Doral's got some quick hands, and we saw some maturity in the ring when he stepped in with Frotch, there could spell he does have all the tools to upset Arthur Abraham, but he doesn't seem to know how to completely use all those tools that he has, that he possesses.
You never know what's going to happen. I thought Kessler was going to pull out an easy win over Andre Ward, and we saw how that went. So, and Andre Durrell did show that he has some skills and some serious talent in that Frotch fight, even if he didn't win. It all comes down to how he fights and what Abraham comes with. I mean, it's not like Abraham, sure, he ultimately knocked out Jermaine Taylor, you know, spectacularly last minute, but if he hadn't knocked him out, he would have won that fight, but it wasn't the most impressive, dominant performance over Jermaine Taylor. So Durrell's got a chance, you know. This is an intriguing fight, but Abraham's got to be the favorite. But, I mean, it's not like Durrell can't win this fight. I mean, it's not like everyone thinks that Abraham's going to win this fight. Durrell's got plenty of supporters as well.
Absolutely, you know, and the thing is, I like to dissect it a little bit, you know. I mean, Arthur Abraham, you got to respect him, what he's done. Got in there with Edison Miranda. He went 12 rounds with Edison Miranda with a broke jaw, okay? And the rematch, he destroyed him. He got rid of him really, really quick, okay? Gets in there with a, you know, I would have to say a shot, Jermaine Taylor, okay? And really just controlled that whole fight from the round one all the way to 12 and did whatever he wanted to. It was like watching a cat play with a yarn ball. And then he takes him out a few seconds before the round ends the way Frotch did it, but in a worse, much, much worse fashion. Now seeing all that, there could be some questions. Are we a little bit blinded of what he's done? You know, Edison Miranda was not the same guy stepping in with him after he had faced Cali Pavlik. Pavlik seemed to have just literally pounded whatever was left in Edison Miranda, the Pantora, and gets in with Arthur. Arthur gets rid of him. And the same thing with Jermaine. You know, Jermaine just had fights too many, okay? Being as young as he was not the same kid stepping in with Hopkins. It really was not the same kid stepping in with Pavlik, you know, and Pavlik destroyed him too. Are we a little bit blinded the way a lot of fight fans and myself and I mean, we were blinded when Antonio Margarito destroyed Miguel Cotto, and we see what happens with Shane Mosley. Chris?
I don't know, man. King Arthur Abraham's got a pretty dope highlight reel. You see some of his knockouts. They're pretty damn spectacular. Yeah, I mean, the fact that he hasn't lost, Miranda pressed him real hard in that first fight, like you said, but the rematch, he took him out. But like you said, Pavlik may have taken something out of Miranda. He put a serious beatdown on him. So it's hard to say. We haven't really seen any weaknesses in Arthur Abraham aside from that Miranda fight. So if there is any, maybe Durrell can exploit him. If not, maybe somebody else in this tournament can. If he can come through the tournament undefeated, though, all questions will be answered, that's for sure.
And you know what I like about Arthur Abraham, even with Frotch too, because, you know, a lot of times in history, you know, there's the UK fighters have always been criticized. They don't want to come across the pond and fight. They want to stay over there, you know, or they like to, like, you know, pad in their record by fighting any just people that come from their part of the world, okay? But these guys, you know, you got Kessler and you got Frotch and you got Arthur Abraham. These guys, especially Frotch and Arthur Abraham, they've been screaming to come down to the States. And at one time, people would be like, oh, they don't want to come down there. And they were like, yeah, we do want to come down there. We want to fight the best. We want to be recognized by the whole world that we are the best, you know. And that's one thing that I enjoy from those two guys, and including Kessler, is that these guys are proving, hey, we're here to fight the best, you know. Now, going back with Arthur Abraham really quick, he's having that, you know, we were talking about a similar fighter, but not in power, you know, Joshua Kalati mimicking a little bit of Winky. Well, Arthur Abraham obviously does the same thing. He's got that peekaboo style, you know. It's effective in his part. He's got the long arms, the big shoulders, you know, the big forearms, but he's a great counterpuncher. And I think a lot of people are starting to see how intelligent he is in the ring. But he can be a little bit of a slow starter. And getting a fast kid like Andre Durrell, who can, you know, throw shots from any angle with speed and has got some pop at the end of those punches, you know, you got to make out that this fight's a lot more interesting than what a lot of people are giving it at this moment, you know, because, you know, even though what we saw from the past, you got to admit that this kid is definitely something to be handled with.
I just hope we get a, I wouldn't mind seeing Abraham Ward go through this undefeated and get to the finals. I think that'd be the most intriguing matchup at this point. And apparently Dave's gone. Dave,
oh, I'm here. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, okay.
No, go ahead. Go ahead with Dave Chen, though.
Oh, I was just going to see what David thought about Abraham and Durrell.
You know what, Dave, you said something earlier that I thought was interesting. I mean, I'm just speaking off the top of my head right now. You know, obviously got no proof of any of this. But, you know, do you think just the Durrell camp, everything that's been happening, it might be because they're trying to, you know, set things up for the future. Like, for example, he's a young fighter. This is his breakout thing, the Super 6 tournament. And obviously, you know, win or lose, he's going to have a career after this. So maybe they think, well, Abraham, everybody's hyping him up right now. Our guy just lost on points, you know. Disputed or not, we did lose. So right now, Arthur Abraham is a heavy favorite. But our guy does have the physical tools to give him trouble. So maybe we'll play on it a little bit, you know, talking about how we got injured during camp. So people give our guy even less of a chance. So if he does pull this off, you know, we got more to gain. We'd be like, oh, you know, look at this kid. He's coming back. You know, he's obviously does have heart. He does have the skills. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think I got what you're saying and stuff, you know. And really, I mean, I don't know. You know, people questioning his heart. I mean, can we really question it? Because a lot of people would have folded against Frotch. You know, Frotch is not the cleanest guy fighter in the world, you know. And he's got one of those old traditional styles of roughing you up. If he doesn't land his glove, he's going to definitely land a forearm. If he doesn't land that forearm, he's definitely going to, you know, he's going to, you know, brush you up with some elbows, you know. He's a tough, tough guy, you know. And Durrell really honestly kept himself composed in that fight. Really showed that, you know what, I can weather the storm. And going overseas too, going into the backyard of somebody else to pull weeds out of the ground, you got to give them a little bit of applause. You got to say, okay, we got something here. You know, this kid could obviously be the real deal. You know, but then you got to kind of lean that he is the young buck coming into the six-man tournament. You know, he is the kid still in some ways having the diapers that pull up. You know, the pull-up diapers. And is he ready completely to take them off? Can he walk alone at this moment in this tournament? I think that's the big question. If anything, that's the big question that is still looming over the head of Andre Durrell, you know. Dave? You there, Dave? You got yourself on mute again.
Yeah, my bad, brother. I'm just doing some work over here. But, you know, the thing is, in your opinion, do you think Andre Durrell is somebody who's seasoned enough to do what's necessary to win in the ring, in the pro ring? You know, we're not questioning his heart. Obviously, he can keep his cool in there, but he did protest about the referee. He did protest about being thrown down, being, you know, being manhandled, things like that. You know, instead of worrying about doing everything in his power within the 3 minutes of each round, his allotted time to shine, to convince the judges and convince the fight fans. You know what I mean? Because he's always seemed to be kind of a jittery guy, a young guy who's maybe not too sure of where he is at the moment. You know, he doesn't speak with the most confidence. It might just be his personality and his temperament, you know, how it comes out. But that's just my impression. And that's not the kind of thing you want when you go up against somebody who's a seasoned veteran, who's got a tough style, got a tough defense to crack, and a pretty scary fighter in Arthur Abraham.
You're absolutely right, brother. I mean, you know, God, there's so much stuff that we could talk about him there and you know, dissect about what he's doing. But I tell you what, if you guys want to call into the radio show, 347-215-7598, you can and chop it up with us a little bit here. I know my other guests are on the line right now that want to talk about this. But I tell you what, I got to take a quick break. I got to find out if our special guest is still calling in and find out where he's at right now, because we did have this time slot for him to get him on to hear what he's got to say. And if not, hey, well, we'll definitely keep rolling in with some boxing that we do got going on here. But for right now, we're going to take a quick break.
Like Adam Bomb in your chest.
You're listening to Leave It in the Week. You're listening to Leave It in the Ring.
No, what's mine is yours, Dave.
You're listening to Leave It in the Ring. You're listening to
La calle sigue loca por acá. Cuidado con los vatos del barrio, porque vida vale poca por allá.
mota, chiva y coca pura va pa' tu mil balas. Pero toca jura más, centro del ciclón brillón. Es el ojo del cañón de ese jefe que tumbó a millón. Psycho y el demonio, la ciudad de Los Ángeles es manicomio. Y ahí vivo yo, encuéntrame en el sitio. En las cuadras guerrilleras de la Pico Unión. Un solo sobrevive entre él y yo. Estoy hablando del gobierno que nos engañó. Ya llegó la tormenta de Dios, oye la voz de los callejeros más conocidos de los. Esto no para, el escudo de la mala fama. Vive rebelde con las maras de la máscara. Rifas en la calle, eres chingón. ¿Te gusta el desmadre? Espérese, home. Guerra mundial cuando pegue el ciclón. Traigo don de la destrucción, o cyclone. Rifas en la calle, eres chingón. ¿Te gusta el desmadre? Espérese, home. Guerra mundial cuando pegue el ciclón. Traigo don de la destrucción, o cyclone.
No podrá jamás. Causamos terrorismo como el grupo Hamas. Aquí les va la verdad, en realidad mis malas rimas se esticarán, revelan una sociedad por detrás. Los secretos no se hablan, compa, por boca floja. Su camisa blanca ahora es roja. Mi sombra negra lo persigue por donde sea. Todo es guerra, estamos listos para lo que se vengan. Prepárense para lo que van a ver. Lo que pasa hoy también pasó ayer. Lo que vamos a hacer es algo de no temer. Yo miro el anticristo en todos los presidentes. Cada vez que nace alguien, otro muere. Parece que nadie va. Es lo que se aprende, no me sorprende lo que hablan de esta gente. A gente unido de puras serpientes.
Si rifas en la calle, eres chingón. ¿Te gusta el desmadre? Espérese, home. Guerra mundial cuando pegue el ciclón. Traigo don de la destrucción con cyclone. Si rifas en la calle, eres chingón. ¿Te gusta el desmadre? Espérese, home. Guerra mundial cuando pegue el ciclón. Traigo don de la destrucción con cyclone. Son psycho locos, es la mente monstruosa fumar que nos trae el foco. Federales andan vigilando, siempre traigo el ojo de las leyes como traigo en fotos. Me ponen en la lista contra conquista, me cargan con las leyes de un cabrón terrorista. No soy Saddam, pero tengo pista. Es la rebelión y se ve en plena vista. Como zapatista, máscara y pipa, con la medicina de la yesca purita, wow. Bajo tierra como un sótano, cuando llegue hora de acción explotamos. Ya llegó la tormenta de Dios, oye la voz de los callejeros más conocidos de los. Esto no para, el escudo de la mala fama. Vive rebelde con las maras de la máscara. Si rifas en la calle, eres chingón. ¿Te gusta el desmadre? Espérese, home. Guerra mundial cuando pegue el ciclón. Traigo don de la destrucción con cyclone. Si rifas en la calle, eres chingón. ¿Te gusta el desmadre? Espérese, home. Guerra mundial cuando pegue el ciclón. Traigo don de la destrucción con cyclone.
Oh shit, we're on. Anyways, man, so we're back, all right. So we were talking a little bit about Durrell, why he pulled out of the Arthur Abraham match that was set for March 6th. It's been moved down to March 27th. You know what? I don't see yet where the venue's going to be at. Do you know where the venue's going to be at now, Chris? Obviously, it's not going to be at the Agua Caliente. You know, it looks like it'd be pushed out maybe, I don't know, Vegas or maybe in his hometown.
I have no idea. It'd probably be best going in his hometown or somewhere where hardcore fans are more likely to flock, which isn't necessarily Vegas. I don't think Vegas is a hardcore. Vegas sells a lot of big fights, but I don't think they're a hardcore fight town. I try to go somewhere like Connecticut or, I don't know, maybe even Texas. Well, I don't know about Texas, but California. I don't know, man. I honestly have no idea. I mean, obviously it's something they're going to have to work out, and both fighters are going to have to be comfortable with. You know, same with Abraham. It's not going to be just Durrell choosing and Abraham agreeing to it.
Yeah, you know, I know there's been some rumors saying that they're going to take it down to Detroit, Michigan. I don't know yet. You know, it's a little bit closer to his hometown, which would be good because it would allow his hometown fans to travel down. I know Agua Caliente is pretty far. It's going down towards, you know, it's definitely past L.A. And, you know, it's by Palm Springs. It's not that far away from Palm Springs. So it is a drive, you know. So you see what happens wherever it goes. I don't know. Hopefully I can end up going. I know a lot of fight fans want to go and witness this fight because I think it is going to be a good fight. And I know that the April, which is the same date. This is a sucky thing. If you guys didn't go, go to the Leave It in the Ring site. We have the full press conference of Thomas Adamek versus Chris and I'm Oriella. They're both talking about their upcoming fight that I believe is scheduled April 24th. Is that right, Chris? Is it scheduled April 24th?
I believe that's the date, but don't hold me to it.
You know what? Let me make sure. I believe that is the date, you know, and on that same day, it's going to be tough. Yeah, April 24th, okay? That and on that same day, man, this is the sucky part, is that there's another fight that I want to watch really bad, and it's really close to my home. It's close to my hometown because I heard the rumors it's going to be in Oakland is Ellen Green versus Andre Ward. I'm hoping that, somebody's back gets hurt in that fight and gets postponed.
Yeah, there's a few fights that are scheduled on the same dates around there. HBO and Showtime going head-to-head. I don't know what's up with that. You got to, you know, I don't have to. I got Showtime, and I'm on that West Coast delay, so I can't watch it live anyway. So it's HBO first and Showtime later for me.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the fight that I want to see, it sucks. I got to pick and choose in what event I'm going to go to. I know I want to go to either one of them. You know, sometimes I wish I could split myself in half and send myself both ways, but yeah, that's the way it is. We're still trying to find out if our special guest is going to come on. It kind of sucks that I didn't have him scheduled exactly at 3 o'clock. But we only got like 30 minutes left, you know, so hopefully if he calls in, we have enough time to ask him some questions that I wanted to ask him, you know, so we're waiting for that person to call in. But anyways, I'm going to go rolling into real quick. Let's go talk about a little bit about what happened Saturday night in the MMA world. And Chris, after your intro done, brother, you got to roll right in.
All right.
Have you ever asked yourselves in an hour of meditation, which everyone finds during the day, how long we have been striving for greatness? It is a privilege to fight! We are warriors!
It is pledged that the winner will allow the loser to hold a proper funeral ritual.
There are no paths between lions and men.
Sir, you got a war face! That's a war face! Now let me see your war face!
So, last night, UFC 110, Cain Velasquez makes his statement in the heavyweight division, knocking out former Pride and UFC heavyweight champion Antonio and MMA legend Antonio Minotauro Rodrigo Nogueira. Big statement. Rob Riddler, did you see the fight, and what did you think of Cain Velasquez?
See Rob, that, bro?
Well,
I was shocked.
Go ahead.
I was just shocked, man. I just was watching it, and I was like, you know, maybe this is going to take a while to warm up. But as soon as I started putting my seat back to get up, I started seeing Cain landing some hard shots. And Nogueira, you know, usually he takes the shots and steps forward, but he got hit one time and took a bounce. And, you know, like he bounced on the ball of his feet. And I was like, oh, wait, you know, something might happen here. And as soon as I sat back down, Cain just drops him. I was like, holy shit. Just knocked him out. I was shocked. I couldn't speak for like 3 minutes. I didn't know what to think about that. I mean, I don't know. I mean, is Nogueira that old? Is he that damaged from the wars? Because this is a dude who was on his back taking big shots from Fedor and nothing happened, and here comes Cain and puts him out easy.
You know, I think it's a combination of Nogueira, all the wars getting to him. His chin used to be pretty legendary, and now it's definitely not what it used to be. But Cain Velasquez, man, for a guy who's only been training for 4 years, coming out of a wrestling background, he looked pretty good on the feet. You know, his hands looked pretty damn good for not training. Like I said, only 4 years, he looked pretty crisp. His combinations were sharp. The thing I was most impressed about is when he hurt Nogueira, all of his punches on the ground landed. You know, he threw 4 shots on the ground. They all were pinpoint. And, you know, another thing I was really surprised to see, he actually made ESPN's top 10 plays of the night last night. It was number 8. So MMA getting a little mainstream shine. But, yeah, man, it was an impressive statement. What do you think about a potential fight against him and Brock Lesnar?
I mean, it depends on it, because I don't think Brock's stand-up is good or proven at all, really. I mean, I haven't really stand in it and actually exchanged some good shots with anybody. And the few times I've seen him get hit, he usually quickly goes for a takedown, so I'm questioning his chin a little bit. But his wrestling, I give Brock the edge in wrestling, of course, you know, just his overall size. But I mean, if Kane can somehow keep the fight on the feet, or maybe just out-hustle Brock, you know, because we saw Brock gassed a little bit in the Randy fight. He seemed to slow down a lot, and Randy was able to get up, you know, but not too many have the skill Randy does. So I don't know. I give Brock the edge, but I'd like to see Kane against Dos Santos. I think that would be a good fight.
Yeah, that may be a future matchup. Either way, I think it's great for, you know, I think it's going to be good, you know, for the Hispanic audience, bringing him in, you know, having a young Mexican heavyweight, you know, especially rocking that brown pride tattoo. The only other fight I really want to talk about is Wanderlei Silva dropping down to middleweight to take out Michael Bisping by decision. You know, Wanderlei looks a lot different with that reconstructed face and at the lighter weight. You know, definitely not the aggressive guy. I saw you commenting on my video about it. Not fighting with the same aggression, but he still got the win. I don't know. What do you think of Wanderlei's performance?
I mean, thing was, I was looking for the stare down to see if he's back or not, to see if he has that aggression or not. And, you know, he came out and he shook Bisping's hand. And it's just, it's like as if Mike Tyson went from his prime to, like, started hugging people right before a stare down or something
like
that.
Hey, guys, I got to interrupt you really quick because our special guest just called in right now. I got to get him through. We got Superman Roy Jones Jr. on the line. Roy, you on, brother?
Hey, what's happening with y'all? How y'all doing?
Good, man. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good. Y'all talking about some real interesting fights coming up. That's very interesting. I'm glad to hear that.
Well, hey, you got to fight a very interesting fight that's coming up right now against the executioner, Bernard Hopkins. You know, obviously, you know, I know you're not happy about the last success of your last fight with Danny Green. When that happened, did you right away, I mean, if that had a pop in your head like, oh, there goes a payday with Bernard Hopkins, or there goes the fight that he's been wanting and you've been wanting to show the world.
Yeah, the fight that he's been wanting is what I was like. I said, well, you know, it's bad, but now I got to come back. I really didn't think the fight was over. I just figured I had to come back and go ahead on and get this dude to do it fairly and beat him. Then I fight Bernard, maybe Bernard, I want to fight him, but I doubt it because when you see they didn't treat me fair, you know they ain't going to treat him no better. So, I mean, it's like, why would you take that stupid chance? When you see, I wouldn't take it if I know it was going to be like that. I thought I was going to get a fair shake. I didn't think they were going to let him wrap his hand like they let him wrap his hand. So, but it's all good. So immediately I thought, well, you know, I ain't going to keep on arguing with people. I can't try the out-the-country thing again. I've been avoiding it. I faced that. I dealt with that demon. Still the same. I ain't messing with it no more. So I was going to call it a day. But then he said, no, I know how I go. That's why I wouldn't go out-the-country. And I still want to fight. I'm like, okay, well, if you just still want this, then I realized, you know, hey, he thinks you old. You can't take a punch no more. When he's older than you, he thinks that, you know, he got you now, so that's why he still want to fight you. So I was like, okay, now I get it. So, you know, I was like, well, the one thing I love to do is prove people wrong, so why not?
Roy, let me ask you this, you know, because, you know, first off, you're a very beloved fighter from a lot of people. You know, you got some very, very dedicated fans to you for your legacy and everything that you've done for the sport, okay? Ever since you've stepped in, you have awed a lot of people. There's never been another Roy Jones of likings of the way you carry yourself and what you do in the ring. But even some of your own hardcore fight fans are saying, Roy, you're ruining your legacy. Why not retire? Why not give up now? Stop stepping in there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, even those diehard fans, I really appreciate their support and their love for me. And it's the fact that people love you, you know what I mean? When people love you, they don't want to see nothing bad happen to you. However, the things that you do and you succeed in your career, they can't undo those things. I mean, I can go out and knock Bernard Hopkins out come April 3rd, which I'm going to do. And that does not stop the fact that he was one of the first guys to have, like, one of the only guys to have 20 title defenses of a middleweight crown. You can't destroy the things that he done. So the things I'm doing now, I mean, they're cool. Some of it's not always in my favor, but at the same time, if you wake up, you're happy, you're healthy, what would you rather me go do? You rather see me go join UFC and start doing that? I mean, I'm going to do something because I'm happy, I'm feeling good, I'm capable of doing things still, so I'm going to want to do something. But what would you rather see me do, something good or something bad? I mean, you ask people all the time, people say, well, go do this or go do that. Well, that's not fun to me. I don't enjoy doing it. I still enjoy doing this. And as long as I can do it, why not? Now, if I was going to the gym and I couldn't hold my own with the sparring partners anymore, or I couldn't dominate like I used to dominate, then you're right, I would call it a day. But it's like I always tell people, only God can make the decision for me. And anybody else, if you let anybody else make the decision for you, then something wrong with you because nobody else gave me the talent. God did. So I think he's the only one that should be able to tell me, all right, son, last time you stop.
Roy, let me ask you this, you know, because, you know, now that's later in your career, you've never been in this position before of being the underdog. Does that motivate you a whole lot more now? I mean, never tasting that fact of being the underdog.
I was against James Toner, but I think I was against John Ruiz. But I like being underdog. That's where I live at. That's what adds credibility to my game. When I'm the underdog, now I got a reason to fight and a reason to perform. If I'm not the underdog, then I ain't got a reason to perform. So I'd rather be the underdog.
Does it get underneath your skin a little bit to see or watch Bernard Hopkins with that grin on his face when he talks about you and says, "This is revenge. This is revenge."
No, it doesn't. I mean, like I said, it just shows me, like I've been telling people, first thing, you know, the guy is he got an issue with me that he can't get over. Second thing is he's so happy now because he thinks that my career is done. He thinks I'm done as a fighter. He thinks I have nothing left in the tank. And so he's come out and wake me out now. He thinks that's why now is the perfect time. If it wasn't that, he wouldn't be fighting me still. So it doesn't bother me. I'm happy to see. I know exactly what's on his mind, and I'm glad to see that.
Is there bad blood? I mean, is there an actual bad blood between you guys, or is
it's
this
a bad blood
some...
between him and it's a bad blood between him and me, not me and him. My only bad blood is I want to see him bleed. That's the only bad blood I got. His bad blood is he's been, you know, a critic of my career the whole time. And, well, he's not really a critic. He'll tell the truth. He knows we both Hall of Fame nominees soon as we hang it up. And he's not the kind of guy who, I mean, you know, Bernard is Bernard. He's going to make everything sound as bad as he can. He's going to always try to get under your skin. He's going to try to take every initiative to bother you, to cause whatever kind of harassment he can, just like he do everybody else. But he knows with me it doesn't work. Our birthdays are a day apart, so I know it's all his games before he starts them.
What is it about that Bernard Hopkins right now that you see you could take advantage of?
Same thing I did when I was younger. He's still Bernard Hopkins. I'm still Roy Jones. He ain't me. He can't deal with me. He don't know how to deal with me. And I'm going to do the same thing to him I did then. Ain't nothing much different.
How did the whole 60-40 thing come about, you know, Roy? Because the last time we had you on Leaving the Ring, you said, hey, I'll give them whatever you want. It's not me. It's them. It's Golden Boy, you know. So did they come up with this whole 60-40 to give, you know, a little more oomph to this match here? Or was this your idea?
You know, everybody always want to take the credit. But if you go back and think about it, since that interview we did in 98, I was saying 60-40. Then I had made a song called 60-40. Then I came on now and said, you know what? I'm tired of the talk. Long time ago, but about 2 years ago, I think, maybe 3 years ago, I said, I'm tired of the talk. If he want to fight me, tell him 60 to the winner, 40 to the loser, or I don't want to talk no more. So I've been coming with 60-40 the whole time. This is nothing new. I've been saying 60-40 the whole time. I didn't care how we did it, 60-40. I just said 60-40. I'll take 60 to the winner, 40 to the loser. I would have took that anyway. So they say, okay, let's do it like this. 60 to the knockout winner, 40 to the knockout loser. If there's a knockout, I say, all right, that's fair. So I take that. So I'm cool because I know that, you know, he thinks that, like I said, he thinks he can land a shot now, hopefully behind my head and knock me out. That's what he's hoping for. And I'm looking forward to that, too. So, I mean, I love it. And it's no problem. But I was the one who came with the 60-40. I've been saying 60-40 the whole time. You go back and check the record, you'll see there's a song called 60-40. So who you think came with 60-40?
Right.
It's not even a question.
By him saying that he's going to knock you out, because he even said, you know, I'm going to punish him, and then I'm going to knock him out. So what do you think about that, man? I mean, you're sitting there and you're listening to this man say this about you because, you know, he's basically basing himself off what has happened in the past with you. You know,
exactly.
What does that do for you?
Not a thing. It doesn't do a thing. I mean, maybe look at him and realize how stupid he has to be. You know, it doesn't realize how stupid he has to be. Okay, you're letting me out. Come on.
Pass it on my co-host, 916 out of Sacramento. Go ahead and ask your man, Roy Jones Jr., brother, your question.
What's up, Roy, man? How you doing today?
Hey, I'm good, man. How you doing?
I'm good, man. You know, I want to talk a little bit more about that Danny Green situation. You know, we heard a lot of it coming out of it, you know, about the hand wraps and problems, you know, with your guys getting back there and seeing what's going on. Can you kind of just give us the details on that, you know, if you knew about that heading into the ring that night?
No, I didn't know. Totally, they told. I said, "What's wrong with this here with his hand wraps?" I said, "What's wrong with this?" And now we're gonna get it fixed. And they wouldn't tell me no more about it, which was smart because they got 18,000 fans. If I did withdraw, we probably wanted to riot and everything else. But when they told the commissioner, they said we need to see his hand wrap one more time because the guy who watched him wrap said he used illegal tape, illegal gauze. He used a gauze that had a adhesive on it, which is totally illegal in the ABC rules. He used 5-inch tape. It was like 4 different things that he did that was totally illegal. The guy complained about all 4 of them. The commission let all 4 of them slide. So the guy came and got my managers and said, hey, this guy has his hands wrapped illegally. Y'all need to go stop that. So they went to go stop it, and they wouldn't let my people back in. So when they wouldn't let me in, my people said, well, if y'all ain't going to let us check his hand wrap or change his hand wrap, Roy, not fight. They said, yeah, well, if Roy don't fight, we'll disqualify Roy. So at that point, my people are like, wow, what the heck we do? So they, I guess at that point, they say, you know what, we're just going to keep it low, let him go on, you know, we have to do, we'll deal with this at another time, because right now, we got 18,000 people out here, wait, we can't tell them not to come out. So I guess, you know, they took this, what they thought was a smart approach and said, no, go ahead. So we came on out, and after the shot, you know, I was like, when I saw it, I was very surprised, first of all, to be down from a shot to the back of the head that quick. I'm like, wait a minute, you know, that's, that kind of shot don't bother me. So, but when I got up, I was good, so he was trying everything he could, holding my head, trying to hit me. He couldn't hit me, really. He couldn't even hurt me no more. So when he realized that he's so frustrated from trying to grab my head and everything else, the referee officer stopped the fight. I said, what you stopping the fight for now? It's too late now. I'm all right. What you stopping it for? So I know Dennis Green had punched himself out. And then I realized, you know, then they went back and they showed me pictures and showed me the box that they took from him, because my guy that went back to watch him rap, he took the box that the gauze came out of, which is also illegal to rap with any kind of gauze that's in a box. You don't rap with your hand with gauze that's in a box. In a box, everybody know that. And it stretched, and the gauze he had also stretched. And they had an adhesive on them. So you don't wrap your hand with nothing like that. That's really making a cast. And when I looked at the pictures, he basically had a cast on. And after the fight, if you look at it, he never took his gloves off in the ring because he had the cast on it. Somebody would have caught it. So, I mean, you know, it was all good, but I just, you know, you hate that you had to become a victim to that, but all those type of things do to me is make me stronger. You know, they did that to me in the Olympics, so they just make me stronger.
Right.
So now they got me in a position where now I got to come back and show them that, you know what, you can try all you want, you can't stop me. And that's what I'm going to do right now. So we're coming back at Bernard Hopkins, it's like the perfect opportunity for me to bounce right back and show them.
Now, when you were fighting at light heavyweight, when you were the reigning champ there, you know, everyone wanted you to go fight Darius Mikulchevsky overseas, and you've refused to. Having gone through this experience in Australia, does it kind of reaffirm your decision to not go overseas and fight Mikulchevsky?
It most definitely does. That's exactly why I never would go over there and fight him over in Germany, because to me, Germany is even worse than Australia. So that's why I never would go, because I know if I'm the man, why am I going to go out there and let them put me on the chopping block? Because they're going to take advantage of it if you go over there. I mean, I've seen guys go to Germany, come back and have a black eye for 3 weeks. One guy told me he had one for a month. I mean, how you get a black eye holder for 3 weeks? Nobody give you no black eye that you hold. Mike Tyson give nobody no black eye that they hold for 3 weeks. They was going to get black eyes and hold them for 3 weeks. What the heck going on? It's a lot going on. But you never know. So I want to go put myself in that position when I didn't have to.
Right. Now, when you fought John Ruiz, after you won the heavyweight title, you know, and you came back and fought Tarver, you said you just weren't as motivated. Would you say that this Hopkins fight is the most motivated you've been since the Ruiz fight?
It'll be the most motivated that I have been probably since the James Toner fight.
Is that just because of Bernard Hopkins? I mean, what is it specifically about Bernard that makes you so motivated
just,
for this fight?
Just because of, I know he's so jealous of me, and he'd give anything he could to beat me, and I refuse to let it happen.
You know, the little press conference you guys had last week, I love the concept. It was set up like a political debate. Whose idea was that? Because that was so original. It's really something I like seeing in boxing.
I think that was HBO's idea, but it was a wonderful idea. I really enjoyed it. I really loved it. It cuts away with the chase. It lets you hear from the main characters and get right to the point, and that's the way I like to do things.
All right. I got one last question before I pass it on to my other co-host real quick. You know, where do you see, after this Hopkins fight, what do you think is left with your career? I mean, is this going to be a final fight? Have you considered, you know, whether you're going to continue fighting on? Where do you see yourself going after this fight? Do you have any idea yet?
I got to see how good I look in this one, then I'll let you know exactly where I'm going. I know I'm going to look good, but I got to see how good I look.
All right, cool. Well, I'm going to pass it on to my co-host, Dave Chimba. Thanks for your time, Roy.
Thank you.
I'm going to pass it on to Rob Riller out of Puerto Rico. Rob, have you got any questions for Superman Roy Jones Jr.? Rob, you there?
No, Rob ain't there.
I think Rob
What's up,
is...
Rob? We wish you were here. We can't hear you, but anyway, we're looking forward to you, and I know that. I know a lot of Puerto Rican friends got a lot of beef with Bernard Hopkins because of the way he came and did y'all country, so I'll take care of that, too.
Roy, if you're going to get in with Bernard Hopkins, if you're successful against Bernard Hopkins, okay, would you get Danny Green back in the ring?
Yeah, I'm going to be successful with Bernard Hopkins, and I will get Danny Green back in the ring, yes.
And if you get him back in the ring, is it going to be in the States? Or?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not a crybaby. I can either fight in the United States with legal hand wrap, Or if you want to fight in Australia with illegal hand wraps, I can do that too, but just let me have some illegal hand wraps too.
You know, I'm listening to everything you're saying about, you know, your camp was going over there and they wouldn't let you guys back in. Now, looking back at that, Roy, do you wish that you would have done it different? Would you wish that this been disqualified rather than stepping in the ring?
You do, but at the same time, you know it's going to be hard to make the fans understand that. You understand me? So you never know what the outcome would have been, and you know, God does everything for a reason. So I'm never taking back steps. So if that's how it turned out, that's how it turned out. Like I said, I'm one of these type of people that feel like God always do things like this to make me stronger. So if He gave me something like that to put in my path, He did it to make me stronger. So it must have been some more hunger that I needed, or something else I need to prove. And for me right now to prove that, you know, without cheating, you can't beat me. That's just who I am. That's just the person I am. I'm really hot, hype, and ready to go now. So that's what I think I needed, and I thank God that He gave it to me.
Roy, if you get knocked out again with Bernardo, is that time for you to just hang up?
You can forget that. That ain't even happening, but yeah, I definitely hang up. If he can knock me out, it's time to quit.
There haven't really been a whole lot of talk of the undercard, Roy, and I'm wondering, do you know anything about the undercard happening in your fight?
I know for a fact they got Rocky Warriors, I think, is fighting. He may fight this kid named Rod Salka that I have, or he might fight somebody else. And also we got a kid named Noor. Ray Noor. Ray Noor is going to be on the undercard. I don't know who Ray Noor is going to fight, but Ray Noor is a heck of an up-and-coming 140-pounder, banger. I got to look to get you out of there, and I can't wait to see him. Also, I got the Black Russian that I just signed. He'll be fighting on the card. He's a light heavyweight. He hopefully will take over the division once I'm gone, and he'll handle it from there. So I'm looking forward to a wonderful undercard with those guys just in itself. And it's possible that we may get Anthony Mundine against one of the guys. They got to forget his name, but they got one of the 154-pounders they're going to put in. It's possible I can get him against Anthony Mundine. I'm trying to get that fight, make that fight happen, because Anthony Mundine was very helpful with me in the situation in Australia anyway. And he's always been a good guy, and we always try to help one another out. So I'm trying to get him on the undercard too.
Roy, if successful against Bernard, if successful against Danny Green, where do you go from there?
I don't know. I talked to my family. I asked them, are they happy? Are they satisfied? If they're satisfied, I can stop. If they ain't satisfied, then I said, what else y'all need me to do? They're going to say, well, we just need you to do one more thing, and you can get out. And I'm going to do that one more thing, and I'm going to be gone.
Roy, man, it's always a pleasure having you on. I'm leaving the ring, brother. I appreciate you stopping through and talking to us a little bit about your upcoming fight with Bernardo Hopkins. I wish you success, man. I wish you success against Danny Green. You know, I've always been a fan, and you know, I can only pray and wish the best for you, brother.
All right, thank y'all, man. I'm just going to say this in closing. I love the Lord. The Lord loves me. Anything God put in front of me or anything He brings me to, He'll bring me through. So when I go through these ups and downs, don't feel sorry for me. I'm a happy guy when I'm going through downs, because I know the only thing left to follow is ups. So always keep your head up, always pray, keep the faith, and be happy, and enjoy what you do, and I love what I do. So when I stop loving what I do, I retire, don't worry. I am the first one to criticize myself and say that, look, I don't want to be slurring my words. I don't want to be doing things that I'm not supposed to be doing. I am a conscious lover of Roy. So I would not allow Roy to be hurt by his own pride or selfish ego if that was the case. So that's not the case at all. The only reason Roy performs is because Roy still feels like that he can perform at a championship level, at a top-notch championship level. I look at a lot of fighters. I always judge myself. I have fighters that I know, that I have signed, that I have seen, that are far younger than me, that need to retire from the game because they've taken too many punches. So I'm very conscious and always aware of this. So whatever y'all do, do not worry about Roy Jones, so he going to be all right.
Absolutely, brother, man. Hey, I can't wait to have you on again, brother. You take
care.
Thank
you, man. Yeah.
Well, there you go. You know, that was our special guest that called in. But I do have another special guest that's on the line, and he's been waiting for some time, and I apologize for having him on hold for some time. But we got Sugar Issa Smith. What's up, brother? How you been, man?
I've been pretty good. How you doing?
Doing fantastic, brother. Doing fantastic. I appreciate you staying on hold, you know, waiting to get on. But, you know, I have some questions for you. And we had a topic a little while ago, you know, Isha, about fighters that, you know, sometimes are looked at as a stepping stone, you know. And obviously, you've been in every little phase in your career. Okay. And I think even Roy Jones could even be put in that category where, you know, at one time you were the hot prospect, then a champion. Then you've been in there for some time. They put you in with Daniel Jacobs as a stepping stone. How does that take a blow to your ego, you know, knowing that that's what people are looking at you when you yourself look great against Daniel Jacobs?
For the most part, I don't think you can let that get to you. You got to understand the economics of the way boxing is built right now. And unless you have that strong promoter that's going to map out a way for you, you know, they're doing it a lot for the younger guys and the guys coming up. And the Danny Jacobs fight was a good opportunity. Unfortunately, I didn't get the win, but I went up way out of my weight class. And, you know, I put on a good fight. And, you know, I probably know the next fight I'll probably be on the B side again, you know. So you just got to hope and pray for an upset. You don't want to leave it too much in the judges' hands nowadays because the judging has just got, you know, horrendous. You know, even with Sean's Porter fight on Friday, I think one judge had it 100-89. So, I mean, it's just it hasn't gotten better. And, you know, obviously if you're going to come in and you know you're being used as a stepping stone, you want to do everything in your power to either beat the guy up real bad or knock him out. That's something you got to worry about now, not just going overseas to be victorious. You got to worry about it in the States now as well because the judging has just gotten horrendous the past few years.
Let me ask you about that fight with Daniel Jacobs because, you know, I was watching that fight and I was definitely rooting for you. You know, I was actually yelling at the television that saying, you got him hurt. You know, get him. And you've never been known to be that kind of a fighter that stays flat-footed and knows powers. You've always been a slick southpaw, always moving. But you brought something different. Was it the weight issue? You know, you going up in weight, blowing up in weight to get in there. Did that have some play in maybe why you didn't go all out on Daniel Jacobs when you had him hurt?
I think it was the weight. I think, you know, I threw a lot of power shots that fight. Obviously, I came out of, you know, character. I did feel disrespected, and I wanted to go in there, and I wanted to knock him out. And I think I got too knockout happy. I knew I could hurt him because, like I said, I had gotten a lot stronger for that fight, and I had went up in weight. I didn't have to cut weight. And I handled 160 pretty well, but, you know, I got off game plan a little bit. I didn't box enough, and, you know, I surprised Daniel Jacobs with the way I fought. He was expecting I was going to fight, and I was a little bit surprised at how well he was able to box and throw a lot of pity-pat punches, so that was a little surprising. So, you know, you live and you learn. You know, I feel, you know, I've been boxing for a long time, and I feel I still got, you know, a few years left, and, you know, hopefully I get one of these fights. I like to fight one of these young guys nowadays. They build prospects, really don't have to beat anyone to be known, you know, as a prospect now. You know, they're building Lara up, they're building Porter up, you know, and I got to, you know, beat a guy like that. It's unfortunately that I've beaten guys like that already over my career, but I got to beat guys like that again for the boxing people to take me serious. So I'm hoping for one of them fights like Lara or Porter or one of these guys like that and pull out an upset and be in line for a title. I think as an athlete, you just want that shot. You want to, if you retire or if you have a good career, you want to say, well, you know what, I fought for a title. Whether you win, lose, or draw, you want that shot. And I think that's what I'm fighting for now, my legacy, and just to get that shot and you know, cash in when that shot presents itself.
Now, you're talking about Erickson Landy Lara, the Cuban fighter that stepped in with Grady Brewer and knocked him out, right? Beat a guy that's also was in the contender series, but definitely is not in any way in the same class of boxing skills, Grady Brewer, with you, right? I mean, to me, that would be a completely different fight for you stepping in with a Cuban fighter. I don't see him taking you out in that kind of fashion the way he did the Brewer.
No, not at all. I mean, Grady Brewer hats goes out to him for winning a contender. He's had a pretty good career, but for the most part, he'll be known as a workhorse in boxing who gave a lot of people tough fights, and he'll be known as a contender champion. You know, I respect everything the contender has done for my career. I still get recognized on a weekly basis from that show, so that's a blessing in itself. But, you know, I want to be known as a boxing champion when it's all said and done, and I would love to fight Lara. You know, I don't think beating Grady Brewer is proven much. You know, the show is different than just regular boxing. When you go on that show, it's completely different, and you know, and hats goes off to Grady Brewer, but, you know, it would be a whole different fight if I was to fight Lara. It would be a whole different ball game, and I just don't think he's fought anyone, and he's fought anyone of my caliber, and I think Golden Boy is pushing them a little heavy and trying to sell them to the public. You know, they're calling for fights with Angulo and guys like that, and, you know, the champion Sergio Martinez, and, you know, he brings nothing to the table. And the economics of boxing is, you know, he wants to fight someone, I'm there. You know, I'm right there. So, you know, it's a fight that I'm definitely looking at, and hopefully in the future it could get made. You know, I definitely don't think Grady Brewer says much because he was just a workhorse before the contender, and he just went on the contender, and great for him. You know, I'm no knocking him at all. He did a terrific job on the show, but he was just known as a workhorse in boxing before that.
You know, witnessing the success of some of the guys that have come from the contender, okay, obviously Alfonso Gomez is starting to get his due and upsetting Jose Luis Soto Cross. We saw Jesse Brinkley in a great, great back-and-forth war with Stephen Curtis. Does that give you any motivation or anything, or it's are you more like, hey, I've been there. I should be recognized already as a great fighter. I should be recognized already as somebody to be taken serious.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've done a lot over my career. You know, like I said, those guys got their chances. You know, Alfonso Gomez got his chance. He didn't cash in. Miguel Cotto, I think, stopped him in like 4 or 6 rounds. And I think Manfredo, he had his chance. You know, he fought Calzaghe, and they may have stopped it early, or he may have been on his way to a beating. We don't know, but he got that shot. And then Sergio cashed in on the shot. It was short-lived, but he fought Vernon Forrest, won, and Vernon Forrest came back a few months later, 4 or 5 months later, and beat him and got his title back. But those guys all got their chance. Alfonso Gomez is with Top right now, and they're building him up. And, you know, maybe he'll cash in on the second chance. And Jesse Brinkley is he's doing a pretty good job at 168 pounds. And, you know, just beat Curtis Stevens. Seems like he's coming on good. And but, see, those guys are being groomed and getting the right fights. You know, with me, you know, nobody wants to fight me. You know, you probably got a ton of fighters that fight Alfonso Gomez that will die to fight Sergio Moore and will die to fight Jesse Brinkley. The problem with me is that, you know, my defense and what I bring to the table, nobody really wants to fight me, and that's the toughest part of boxing. You know, it's probably 10 guys that are lined up to fight Jesse Brinkley, 10 guys to fight Sergio, and, you know, a bunch of guys that are fight Alfonso Gomez. It's hard for me to get fights because I'm too much of a risk. So that's the toughest part, the difference between me and those guys.
Absolutely, brother. Let me ask you just one more question before I let you go, brother. And the last question is, how is your how did it go about your mailbag on boxing scene?
It was just something that came about with obviously with Rick Reno. He runs a great website, and it just came. He was kind of shocked when me and Greg Leon from Boxing Talk parted ways, and, you know, he just asked me would I come over and do some mailbags, and, you know, I said sure. You know, I've been doing writing for about, you know, 6 years now, and started on Boxing Talk. They gave me the opportunity, and, you know, I've actually expanded, you know, more doing, you know, interviewing people and, you know, more with my thoughts. And, you know, it's just a great opportunity because, you know, I never went to school to be a writer, and I'm learning a lot. I have writers who are in the business like Karen Marvaney and like Rick Reno, you know, and I'm learning. I'm learning as I go along. It's something I'll probably dip into after my career is over, but I absolutely love it. I love interviewing fellow fighters because I'm able to ask the questions that a normal person or a normal interviewer wouldn't be able to ask because I know what they're going through. So it was great. I had Ann Wolf on and had another local prospect in Vegas on. I got Steve Cunningham and Antonio Tarver lined up soon here. So it's just great. It's good. It keeps me busy, and, you know, I love doing it.
Hey, man, I appreciate you coming through and talking to us on Leave It in the Ring, brother. It's always a pleasure when we have you on. You know, I can only wish you the success. And like I said, man, I'm always pulling for you. I thought you had the Daniel Jake. I thought you had it, man. You know, and it's, you know, it sucks to see somebody that you follow and you're a fan of not get that win. But till the next time, you know, There's always okay. that next one.
Yeah, correct, man. Thank you guys for having me on. God bless you guys. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, brother. Take care. Okay, well, you know, there we go. We had Freddie Roach on first. We had Roy Jones Jr., and then we had Ise Smith. We only got a few more minutes left on the radio show, so what I'm going to do is, we'll recap a little bit about what's going on. You know, obviously, Roy's got his big coming up fight, Chris, with Bernard Hopkins, the Executioner, and, you know, it's a fight that a lot of fight fans have been wanting for years and years and years, you know, but some fight fans feel there's some unfinished business with Danny Green, and we heard it from Roy saying that, hey, I don't have a problem fighting him. I'll fight him again. I actually want to fight him again in the rematch. He'll go back to Australia. He'll come in the or he'll make it in the States, you know, but and he was really – I would have to say, man, he was really cool about the fact about us asking him, how does he feel about a lot of fight fans saying, Roy, it's time for you to hang up the gloves. You're ruining your legacy. What did you think, Chris?
I thought Roy was pretty damn honest. You know, I think I said before when he's been on the show, in the past, Roy is, I mean, obviously he's very self-assured still, but he had a pretty good-sized ego. But I think now he's become a little bit more down-to-earth with the losses. Become a little bit more realistic. I mean, he actually said, you know, he answered the question. He said if he gets knocked out by Bernard Hopkins, he will retire. You know, but the one thing that is the most interesting to me is Roy is a very confident fighter. You know, he thinks he's going to win. He thinks he's going to knock Bernard out. And I know people question it and say he's delusional and, you know, want to talk trash. But the fact of the matter is if Roy Jones didn't have that confidence in himself, he would have never made it as far in this game as he did. So it's something that got him this far. And it's something that's going to, you know, that continues to keep him fighting. And regardless if people want to see this fight or not, I guarantee you, everyone listening to this show, the day of that fight is going to want to know what happens.
Absolutely. You know, and that's one of the things that regardless, the curiosity is going to be there between Roy Jones Jr. and Bernard Hopkins. And really, honestly, the 60-40, you know, 60-40 is the person that KOs and the 40 goes to the person that gets KO'd, gets knocked out. It obviously puts a big boost into this fight because it just kind of shows that there is, in some ways, both of these guys want to put a hurting on each other because it's been long overdue to see these guys getting in that ring, you know. Like always on Leaving the Ring, it's always our pleasure, man, to have the fight fans, the hardcore boxing fans come through and listen to us and show their massive support for us on Leaving in the Ring. If it wasn't for the guys listening and writing to us and, you know, putting in their input and the people that help us, we gotta make our shout outs to our PRs and the people behind the scenes that do help us out in making sure and bringing this show to you guys. And like I said, Sunday was a special edition. We'll be doing a Sunday roundtable again for the Manny Pacquiao versus Joshua Kalati. It's going to be a huge, huge show. I don't think you want to miss it. You'll want to save the date because you're going to have a lot of people come through to talk about who they pick and why they pick the person that's going to win on March 13th between the mega match between Manny Pacquiao versus Joshua Kalati. You heard it from Freddie Roach. We will recap what happens, with the fight. Well, not recap, but we're going to make down our breakdowns. I know a lot of people have been hitting me up saying, Dave, you keep saying you're going to make more YouTube vids, but you haven't. I'm sorry, guys. I've been really, really busy. It's not that I don't want to do them. It's just the timing right now has been really, really difficult for me and stuff. But I'm definitely going to do them. Until next Thursday, I'll talk to y'all and hope everybody had a great, great, great weekend. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. I know I am. Chris, my brother, I'll talk to you later.
All right. Talk to y'all soon.